We are back. Yes, Desert Eagle here. I've returned with my band of sweet and tender hooligans, which include the mouth from the Dirty South, Sean Nola Kirkland.
The Durr, as we like to call it.
The Durr. Missing in action is our attorney in Albuquerque, Sage Samarage Morris Green, who should be joining us momentarily. Hopefully. Yeah. But
I'm a girl, and I'm from New Mexico.
I was hoping for some impression to fill in the dead air. Last but not least is a Sailor Moon fan so devoted that Chris Hansen has this podcast wiretapped. Eric, full of win, Blue Swim.
Happy Halloween!
No joke.
Happy Halloween!
No joke. When I was in San Antonio, I went into this toy store. They're having a sale on Sailor Moon posters. I was like, oh, I should totally buy one of these and bring it back to Blue. And then I remembered he lives in a different state and I would have to ship it to him. And he might as well just order posters off the internet at that point.
It's the thought that counts, isn't it?
Yes.
So yes, should we commence with the apologia and explain why we haven't been here the last couple weeks?
I haven't been here because I was at the Geospatial Intelligence Expo in San Antonio.
Was there intelligence in San Antonio?
The geospatial type.
Ah, okay.
Lots of spies and shit. And all sorts of craziness.
Cloak and dagger shit. Okay, awesome.
Well, there were a lot of times where people would come up and you'd be like, oh, hi, and try and look for their badge. You don't have a badge. All right. You're like, yeah, I don't want people to know who I am. Like, that's cool. Or sometimes somebody would come up and they're very obviously important, but they have a spouse badge.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's someone else important that they're married to.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's crazy. Like basically I was told whenever somebody comes up with a spouse badge, that I was supposed to go get my boss because they were someone important.
Wow. That's just like that's just like when you have tech gaming at E3 written on your badge.
And they always go and grab someone important.
Yes.
If it's tall, bald guy, grab me right away.
Or the hawk. So should we start with some impressions? What we've been playing?
I say so.
Yeah, what have we been playing?
Well, let me start with the big guns, which would be Battlefield 3. And kind of a mixed bag. Let me start with the good part, multiplayer. Seriously, if you're a fan of multiplayer competition, I'd recommend buying the game. I foresee some serious enjoyment at least through the remainder of the year. I put in a few hours on the PC version, and man, this game is just godly looking. With 64 players on some of the maps, things can get a little hectic, both from a game sense and also visually. I don't know about all the game's changes. Some of the things that they have are the vehicles, they slowly repair themselves, which is a little weird. But if you have a PC capable of running it, I would recommend it. As far as the console, the single-player game, I played it a little bit on the PS3. Technically, it can impress in parts. I think the faces look pretty good. They purportedly use the FIFA modeling engine. The locations themselves look good, but they're almost drawn in this impressionistic manner, if that makes any sense. By that I mean the whole picture looks good, especially the lighting. But when you start to look at some of the details, you'll notice little things are missing or absent. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I think that's not a bad way to go, because I feel like your average Battlefield player is not going to be looking at details.
Yeah, that's true. If you're moving around, you don't really notice it. It's when you stop. And then when you're prone and you're not absolutely flat, like you're crawling up a small hill, it looks like you're doing a swim motion, which through rope is kind of weird. So it's really kind of wonky and threw me out. The gameplay itself is just way too linear. There's a near kind of constant, this blue translucent marker telling you where to go. And the game just feels like the hallways and areas never really let you off the leash the way, say, Resistance 3 or Crysis 2 do. So that's a big minus in my book. I also think
Perfect Dark Zero says hello.
Yeah, exactly.
Now here's my thing about the campaign. So somebody said before the game even came out that for review scores' sake, they probably should have just left it out. Yeah, because from what I hear, it's all about multiplayer. Battlefield games hadn't had a campaign before,
right.
And the only thing they could have done with a campaign is tarnished it. You know, you're buying it for the multiplayer, but we've included this campaign, and so now that's got to be part of the review now.
But when your major competitor is, you know, Call of Duty 3, Modern Warfare 3.
That's been the other argument, though, is that that they shouldn't have put themselves up against Modern Warfare.
Okay. But assuming that they did, you can't, you know, not give some kind of single player game. It feels rushed in many ways. I think that the enemy AI seems really boring, and that really didn't make the game fun to play. Things like there'll be locked doors in areas, and you turn your back on them, and bad guys suddenly appear. You know, the old monster closets thing, which isn't fun. It just feels kind of rushed. Like, I really think they put their time in the multiplayer and spent just a little bit of time in the main campaign. The weapons are good. They're solid. They're varied. The one thing was, I was playing in 720p, and occasionally I didn't feel like I had the precision, and maybe this was playing the PC multiplayer previously, I didn't feel I had the precision I needed, so I was kind of relying on auto-aim when shooting, you know, a distant foe. For a game that's more arcadey than sim, it also makes some strange choices there, like grenade indicators. You won't see them unless they are in your field of vision. And there's things like instant kills and a lot of like quick time events. And I don't know about you, but I'm a little over quick time events these days.
Quick time events in a multiplayer game?
No. I'm talking about the single player game. There's a lot of them. And I don't know. In all, the game, you know, it offers a good multiplayer game on console, but don't get it for the single player or co-op campaign. Sean, you were the one that told me, and a few other people told me as well, that they had waited to, you know, for review's sake, they put out a patch, kind of a day one miracle patch. And it was a fairly hefty download on the PS3, about 250 megabytes. Even with that in, there's still instances of glitchiness and bugginess all over the game. I can see why the reviewers are giving the game an 8. They're kind of splitting the difference between the two, you know, main components there. Mm-hmm. So,
speaking of big downloads right off the bat.
Of big downloads, I went to the bathroom.
No, I actually got this really good idea today, that because I was thinking about this because of Batman, because I'm going to, like I said before the show, I'm going to go pick that up and I'm just going to rent it and pay for the Catwoman code.
Sure.
But it would be really cool if Sony or Microsoft, or preferably both, would release like an app for iPhone or Android where when you buy a game, you can call up your system and say, hey, I just bought this game, and it will go and download the stuff so that on your way home, it's downloading and installing. So when you get there, you just throw the disc in. Because it's everybody's complaint is that you buy a new game, you throw it in, you download the patch, and you wait.
That is a good idea. And it's not too far from PS Plus. I mean, you can, you know, often I'll start downloading something, and I'll say, oh, you know, I want to play a game. And then, you know, PS Plus will come on and turn on in the middle of the night, usually when my bandwidth is the fastest, like 4 in the morning, and download things, except for SOCOM 4. I was trying to play with Jeremy Lamont this week. And he asked me, hey, are you up for some SOCOM 4? And I said, oh, hell yeah, you know. So I put it in, download half gigabyte patch. And so
that is actually why I stopped playing SOCOM Confrontation.
Yeah.
And the
actual patching is in-game, so I don't think PS Plus recognizes it. You know, you have to actually put the disc in and bypass a certain area. You know,
Metal Gear Online was actually the worst about that, because Metal Gear Online, the way it would do, it would have these huge patches that were all in-game, and then they were all done by torrents.
Yeah, I remember.
So there had to be so many other people online playing for you to download anything, and it would take literally days to download a patch.
Come on,
so,
Cedars.
Fuck this.
Yeah, there are two Cedars on, so yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not the best idea. So let me jump on portables for a second. I got in some PSP codes for Metal Slug 2 and King of Fighters 96, both for PSP and the PS3. And I know we've discussed kind of the SNK's pricing schemes for the games. And one thing I noticed was both the PS3 and the PSP versions were a little bit with, you know, like 5 and some change for PS Plus purchasers, which isn't too bad. For me,
it is.
Wait, combined?
For Metal Slug 2?
Yeah.
$5? I think that's a little steep.
What?
I don't know.
I would rather pay $5 for a classic like Metal Slug 2 than $250 crappy PSP mini stuff like Zombie Tycoon. I don't think it's bad at all.
I would much rather pay $20 for an SNK collection, which has like all the Metal Slug games on it.
I'm not going to argue that because I totally agree with you. But
it's available. Like, that's what I don't understand. Why sell these games piecemeal that are already available in a much cheaper package?
But they're not on PS3. They're on Wii.
Yeah. No, they're on the PS. Go on the PlayStation Network. There's SNK Collection and Metal Slug Collection on there already. They've been there since before SNK started this weird piecemeal.
For PSP.
For PSP.
Okay. And it has
Metal Slug 2 and King of Fighters, are they PSP minis or?
No, they are not. They are separate for the PS3 and the PSP. So that's kind of the downside. The other downside,
If they were like $3, like the SNK minis, that would have been fine.
That would have been perfect. And I think $5 on both PSP and PS3. I think even Sean would give the go ahead on that one. Yeah or no?
I would.
Yeah.
I think I like the way Sega does their piecemeal things better. Is that they're sort of bonuses for PlayStation Plus members. Mm-hmm. And if you want to pay that, I think they're like $2 for their Genesis games. If you want to, you can. But really, it's just a reason to get a PlayStation Plus membership because you're basically getting both the membership and the games for free at that point.
Did you grab Altered Beast?
I grab everything Sega puts out because they're always free and they're always a week early. So I've got Altered Beast, Sonic 1 and 2, and Comic Zones. That's, I think... $10 worth of stuff right there for free.
I haven't played Comic Zone in a long time.
I like that game. I do. A lot of people have some sincere hate for that game, and
it's tough.
Those people are terrible people.
They're terrible. They're soulless.
I played that about a month ago on that Sega Genesis collection that I got for the PSP. I played that for about, it was just maybe 15 minutes or so, and it's a lot of fun, but yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I remember when that game first came out thinking that was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen in my life.
And now, what does it feel like?
And if you can put yourself back in that situation, it was really innovative. But, now it's cool. What, 15-year-old game?
Should it get an HD remake?
No, it's because it's one of those things that every good idea about that game has since been taken and done other things with, and that's great. And you don't really need an HD remake of the original because it's going to seem derivative.
Right. So anyway, back to Metal Slug 2. It is Metal Slug. There's no slugs, but there is metal. It's got some slowdown on both the PS3 and it's a bit worse on the PSP. But I didn't find that to be that bad, as I was doing a little bit better in the game because it was moving at a reduced speed. King of Fighters 96 didn't have that problem, and I kind of wish they had brought Metal Slug X over because that alleviates a little bit of the slowdown.
Metal Slug X is already available on PSP.
Is it? Is it? No, is it on for PS3 as well?
No, so the PS3 collections I can understand because those aren't available. My problem is specifically with the PSP games that are already available.
Okay, well, one sticky point I know for purists is that there's gray blood or sweat or whatever you want to call it in the game.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, really?
Really? Yeah. There's gray stuff that pour out of people, which is pretty gross.
Yeah, readers, listeners, you might have heard that Sage is here from inside of her submarine.
I am.
It's yellow.
It is yellow. Sometimes it's turquoise, too, though.
That's called nice. Camouflage. Yeah, that's good.
Yep, cool. Exactly. It's psychedelic camouflage.
For real, though, why do you sound like you're inside of a submarine?
Do I? I don't know. Is this better?
Okay. Back to the console front. I played a little Ratchet & Clank All for One, which was improved from the beta that we, Sean and I talked about a few shows back, but still not improved enough to recommend. Visually, the game's definitely a step down from the usual Ratchet & Clank games. Even the single-player game can struggle to hit 30 frames per second, which is a far cry from the fluidity of the usual.
Did you read that one review that was just a list of all the bugs that are still in it, though?
No, who put that out?
It is pretty lengthy. I want to say it was Games Radar that put that one out, but it was basically Ratchet and Clank. Here's the introduction to the game, had a bunch of bugs in it. Like, it would crash at this point, or it would do this weird thing at this point, or this, that, the other. It was like just a big-ass long list of ways that he had crashed the game. And, like,
I didn't get much of that. I think the thing that bothered me most about it was now the game's kind of pandering to this preteen market. I always thought Ratchet & Clank was this game where a parent wouldn't be bothered if their kids played it. There was nothing, you know, too bad. There was this little, you know, couple of innuendos and a little clever bit. So, you know, enough so adults wouldn't feel too weird playing it. But now they have this character. Her name is Sue. She's like this precocious 8-year-old girl with a really shrill voice, and I think it's just an awful decision. Bad Insomniac. Anyway, the speaking of awful decisions, I think the game's big bragging point was the co-op multiplayer. It's not much of a draw. I think the game can get a little too busy during boss fights, and then it gets a little too boring when there's not enough for four people to interact with. And then the weapon improvements have also been dumbed down. So basically it's okay for a single player. It gets kind of chaotic and, you know, mixture of chaotic and boring for four players and not much fun.
I'm still waiting for the part that I want to hear, which is where you say, oh, Sean, you were right that stupid drop-in, drop-out multiplayer thing actually was part of the final product.
No, they fixed that.
No, they didn't. They have the stupid waiting rooms and you can ask people to reload a level for you if you're still waiting.
Really? I played a four-player game. I played a couple of four-player games, I didn't experience.
But did you play any games where you start with three or less and then a fourth person enters in?
I could have sworn so.
Yeah, what they do is when you enter a room, you can request that the host restarts the level so you can join in. And then if you do that, the host gets this big pop-up that takes up the entire screen saying, do you want to restart the level? And then you have to hit the right button to make sure you don't restart the level because it's obnoxious.
I don't think I was hosting. Maybe that was the problem. Or maybe I just was so bored I wasn't paying attention. I don't know.
Oh, you would have noticed because it does. It takes up the entire screen.
Let you know. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that's Ratchet & Clank. Maybe $20 or less. It just seems like the completely wrong direction for the franchise.
I think it's a bad first effort from their new studio.
Yeah. It's not a good sign. So, do you think they're spread too thin?
I don't think they're spread too thin. I think that they probably had the problem of, all right, we're going to open up this new studio. We're going to find a bunch of people that want to move to South Carolina. We got to do all the office maintenance stuff. And we're Insomniac, so our first product has to send out on this date, and we won't move that because we're Insomniac. And that's our gimmick. And I think that for this specific project, they should have given up on that.
Because I think both, well, Resistance 3 is good, but it still has some, I still have some issues with it. And I just think the split, both Resistance wasn't as good as it could have been. And obviously All for One was not at all. And I can't help but think the split took talent.
But it didn't, because All for One is an entirely new studio.
Okay, so no,
people
nobody,
working on Resistance. Yeah, nobody,
nobody moved from Burbank?
The one guy who moved from Burbank to start it did. Okay. But the Burbank studio is still the Burbank studio, and the South Carolina studio is the new South Carolina studio. Okay. And that explains why All for One is so shitty. The Resistance, yep. The last two Resistance games has been because Insomniac will not move their ship date. Mm-hmm. And that works, I think. For whatever reason, they've got the pipeline for the Ratchet & Clank games down. But for Resistance, I think when you add that whole multiplayer element to it, there's just a lot more that goes into making a Resistance game. And they need to teach themselves it's okay to miss a shipping date every once in a while. Or at least
have 2 years for this last one.
And apparently 2 years wasn't quite enough.
Yeah.
Maybe 2.5 years they would have gotten it, but...
No,
I think especially moving forward, it's not gonna be easier to make a PlayStation 4 game.
Right,
they need to.
I guess my main issues with Resistance 3 stem from they're not so much technical or design, it is really like story based choices. Like I just thought the story was so pathetic.
Well, that was the second one too.
Yeah, okay.
I've heard the story in the third one is better than the second one, but I haven't gotten to play it yet.
I just did not care for the guy, the main guy in the third one, and didn't care for. I just thought the plot line was so contrived; it was embarrassing.
I barely cared about Nathan Hale, so.
Okay, so last thing I'm going to talk about this week, And I know, Blue, you were kind of looking forward to it. One of the games I had a better time with this week, Cave Story 3D. So, and for those people that don't know, it's a reimagining of the 2004, I believe, freeware PC game created by Pixel. And for those who haven't played the original, the WiiWare version, which I believe that Tidegear reviewed for us a couple of years ago, it is a wonderfully retro Metroidvania, a word I think he loves, game that feels like it feels like the greatest NES game that you've never played. It's just hard. The enemies move in these satisfying patterns. Like, they'll just kind of sit there until you creep up on them, and they're hard enough to nail down. I'd put there somewhere between the Fishmen and Castlevania, and maybe the you know, some of the smaller enemies in Metroid. There's a solid selection of upgradable weapons, and it looks really good in 3D. One of the things that I noticed is they did most of the 3D is depth, but they had one instance where things are, you know, above or between the screen and your face, and I found myself kind of craning my neck one way to look around it, which was kind of cool. The one criticism is if you play it and you don't pick it up again for a few days, it can be hard to remember what your current objective is. It doesn't always tell you like what to do. And even when you are consistently play it, sometimes like the text, it's not as direct as a lot of games. And there's a map in the game, but it doesn't tell you and yell at you like, go here, stupid. But
there's no menu option to sort of highlight what your current objective is.
Nope. That's just it's hard, and it's like a, you know, NES game, just like those older games that didn't really tell you. That said, it's really fun, and I'd love to see Pixel continue on this path after he finishes that iPhone game he's committed to, Rockfish, I believe. So
you're glad he's committed to he's staying on the path of making the same game for the 10th time.
No, this would be his third. I didn't get to see his first game. But I would love to see more Cave Story. I'm not sure.
That's what I'm saying, is that you're proud of him for remaking Cave Story again.
I don't know how much of a hand he's had in the remix. What is the company? Nicholas, that did the WiiWare remake. Mm-hmm. I think he okays it, and you know, I think he observes it, but I don't think he's had a hand in it anymore.
Kind of like the guy that's that makes Minecraft and the Xbox 360 version of Minecraft.
He has his own company now.
It is
nuts. Yeah, something like that, Blue. So yeah, but I don't think I don't really think Pixel is hands on with it anymore. Mm. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. Could be making that up.
Now, did they? What's the art style like? Did they improve it since the last time? I saw it several months ago.
A lot of
people
complained about it. The only complaint I could ever see is that your main character is pretty small, but it's not an issue. I mean, the art style is more, what could I compare it to? It's a really nice looking platformer. At first it can be a little, there's one stage, what is it called? I think it's like the egg zone there.
Sonic?
Yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking of. There's eggs at the
bottom. Death egg!
And, there's eggs at the bottom of the screen. But there's a certain amount of depth. There's a certain amount of three-dimensionalness to it. And when you play it, there's kind of a question of where can I jump? I know it's kind of hard to explain without seeing it, but those areas, where can I jump and what can I jump through? Because it's, you know, in different perspectives, different levels of depth there. But other than that, it looks really good. So, no complaints, sir.
Does it have the traditional pixels or retro style?
Yeah, it is that.
Because I think the screenshots were of like 3D caricatures of it or something like that.
No, I don't see anyone having a problem with the visuals of it. And once you finish it, you get the printy. So
printy.
Yeah, I'm really
printy, dude.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Playing as a Prinny. And that's all I've been playing. Well, except for a little Batman, which you'll talk about, Sam Rage, and a little Forza 4, which you'll talk about.
You've only been playing a little Batman?
Okay, about 12 hours worth.
Okay.
So let's talk about Batman, then.
It's wonderful.
It is. Do you know
I love it.
Okay, I don't want to spoil it, but there's a part that gave me chills. Do you think you know
what I know when Catwoman gets all naked.
That gave me a different kind of chill, more the hot kind of chill.
Wait, you or me? No, there's something on the ground, and that's all I'll say about it.
About when in the game, without giving locations away?
6 hours. Well, it's a place on the map. Okay, no, I don't want to spoil.
So open up your map, and there's a part that says there's a thing on the ground here.
No, there's
just should we do like alert. A spoil?
Yeah, just
do like a spoiler alert.
On or for Blue.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing it next week.
Okay. Well, we'll wait. I will say, having beaten it.
Yeah.
Well, because there's more play after the credits, so don't skip the credits.
Right.
Well, I'm sure you could still play even if you do, but like going, I will say you should not skip the credits. So that's one. But two, having beaten the game, the ending of the game gave me like the shudder and heebies. I mean, it was it's a very intense ending.
Maybe you didn't find what it is I'm talking about there.
Well, I don't know if I mean, I don't know how to answer you without because it's so. Why don't you text it to me?
I'll go ahead and spoil it. So Deagle found it's this little disc, and on top of it is a green question mark thing. And he's like, "Whoa, the Riddler's probably in this game."
Yuck!
Is it?
Like an ass, dude.
I like this idea that Deagle went through the entire game without finding any Riddler trophies, and then when he found one, he was like, whoa.
Dude, I found this thing.
If that gives you pleasure, that's fine. No, I was collecting.
Is it a computer game? Is it a computer game that Edward Nygma made?
No. No. God, you guys come up with weird shit.
That was on Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, I know.
Did you do you see that? No, Simmering.
Oh, I do see that.
Did you find that?
No, I don't think I did actually.
Oh, okay. It's somewhere in the city, and it is such an amazing scene.
Where in the city was it?
I don't know. I just stumbled upon it, and
shit.
And then with the voiceover, I think who was talking to me? It was Joker. Was talking to me, and he was kind of screwing with me for a little bit, and then it gave you like an option to do something there. I was like, huh. That is so cool.
No, that's I think that it is interesting how much more because Arkham Asylum was underneath it all very linear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like the rooms gave you options for how to tackle the bad guys, but other than that, it was really linear. And Arkham City really rewards you for just like. Wandering around the city exploring. I know a couple people who just beat it in the first day and they ignored everything basically other than, you know, a couple of sort of integrated side quests, but they basically just did the main storyline. And I think they really missed out because I feel like it's more enhancing if you mm-hmm. stumble upon those things as you're wandering around while you're playing the main storyline rather than going back and beating them as though they were like this ancillary thing that you could do afterwards.
Now, the one thing that kind of threw me off, because I'm a side mission person, was there mm-hmm. appears to be a timer on the main storyline.
No, I don't think so.
Are you sure? I kept getting warnings.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe it depends what part you are. I never got a warning ever. I would get
do we have to play the same game?
Well, I would get, it wasn't a timer. I would get like a, you're this far away from the thingy.
No,
but it wasn't
I'm talking about the number of hours until something.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that actually matters. I think I think those announcements show up at certain main story plot points, but I don't think it actually sticks to the hours that you're playing.
Okay.
I know that it doesn't.
I better stop around.
You know what? I wish they would make a Spawn game like Arkham Asylum, but it has the Spawn counter from the original Spawn. So like, you could only attack so many times during the course of the game before you died and had to start all the way over again.
I don't think that would work for Batman.
But it would work for Spawn, and I think that would be rad. And nobody would like it except for me.
It would be like the Prinny games where you get 999 lives.
Sort of, except it's like 999 punches. Okay. So like every time you punch a dude, you lose a little bit of life.
That would drive me nuts. I don't know if I could cope with that.
It would be so rad.
Yeah.
Can you imagine an altered beast like that?
Altered Beast after five punches. If you're not dead, then you're already too far in that game.
Check your pulse.
That's weird.
I have beaten Altered Beast.
So have I.
I know. Doesn't that make you sad when you think about that?
No. It's a badge of honor that I wear proudly. Okay, so one thing I want to say about Batman is I really like it, but one of the sticking points for me was that every once in a while, Batman will just die in the stupidest way. You know, you make one small mistake. And I kind of wish there was a early part where you're above this kind of molten iron refinery, and he fell in the lava. And it was almost humorous, right? And I thought, okay, Batman, you know, he's been doing all these things, and he falls in the lava, and he just dies. And that's it. Game over. And what's her name? Harley Quinn's laughing at me. Okay. But I almost wish that there was some kind of slowdown and there was a button to avoid that, because I thought that sometimes dying by doing a single thing wrong, a wrong, you know, button press or something, took me out of the game. And it seemed very un-Batman. To just
how, Batman is how, too badass to be killed by lava.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, how often does that happen to you? Because I feel like the only time I ever had like a moment like that is when it does, when you're headed for the water, and mm-hmm. then it does do like a slowdown, and you're like, oh no, wait, let me use my, you know, bat hook. And I didn't have any
on the
moments.
Water, yeah,
you...
but on the lava, or when you're around guys with guns and you don't use your.
Well, dude, if they shoot you, you die. That's not like unreasonable. That's the whole point.
But Batman has a really expensive bulletproof suit, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't, in fact. So wait, so you're complaining that every now and then he dies because you're not good enough at punching out bad guys. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, basically, that's it.
Oh, so you're whining.
No, it's not about that. It's just I wish that I wouldn't have to see Batman die in stupid ways, because that's not Batman.
It's more about,
you know, attacking guys. It's just like falling off a ledge, like pressing the wrong thing.
Right. No, the lava thing I agree with. Like, falling off a ledge, you should get a moment to, like, be able to use your bat hook. But if you die in a battle, that's... I mean, I don't know. I never felt bad when I died in a battle because I knew I had screwed up. I was like, well, I didn't block for, like, the last 8 hits. So, yes, I can see why I would be knocked unconscious.
And I also feel like if you training wheels it too much, it kind of makes you not want to play the game right. Like, let's say, in true Batman fashion, Batman would never fall off a ledge into lava. So... Let's take that to its logical conclusion, which is you fall off the ledge, Batman automatically pulls himself out.
Mm-hmm.
Then what's your incentive to not fall off the ledge?
No, I agree with that. And actually, what I thought was refreshing about this one is that unlike most sequels, they didn't take basically any time at all to reteach you anything from the first game. Like every now and then you would get a gadget and they would remind you how to use it. But if you any gadgets you start with. And any maneuvers like sliding under doors and shit, you can basically use them before they mention it, if they mention it at all, on your own. And that's mm-hmm. just a reliance of like remembering the controls or looking them up, which I really like. Like I miss the days of like I have to look up my own controls and I don't have some fucking baby monitor holding my hand as I play the game telling me, now push this button, darling, and you will be able to do this thing. Fuck you. Like I should have to take that into my own hands.
I agree.
So anyway, that was refreshing. I liked that about this game.
Yep. Very cool. And I liked it. It started you off with a good amount of your weapons and gadgets right off instead of you having to re-earn them again.
The Riddler, I really liked how the Riddler stuff was incorporated into the game. It felt a lot more organic and natural to the game flow.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't like the way he was rendered, though.
Yeah, it was weird. He seemed to be rendered differently than everybody else. That was weird.
Yeah, it was like everybody else had a different art style, and he was more realistic.
Yeah, he was like the Jim Carrey Riddler, superimposed into the game.
Yeah.
Bright orange hair?
No, not that part, but like the facial structure and he looked like a real person instead of like everyone else looks sort of arty'd up.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Like Penguin has like some sort of a voice thing on his throat or something like that, if I... saw it in the video correctly.
You mean
doesn't he have something on his throat?
Yeah, he does.
He had a bottle cap for a monocle.
No, he's got. There's a reason for that. You can find the storyline for that.
Maybe I didn't pay for the DLC, or I didn't get.
If you know, it's a picture you take, and then you get a. You get a. I like that too. They didn't even remind you how to take pictures. It was like, oh yeah, wait, I can take pictures. Actually, on that, Blue, yes, he does have a thing on his throat, but it's not, I mean, it's just as artsy styled as everything else.
It's because he keeps Nolan North in that little box on his throat, and that's who talks for him.
Yes, exactly.
And Mark Hamill did an amazing job speaking of voice work.
He really fucking did. Oh my god.
Yeah. So Better than Arkham Asylum?
Well,
it's the same character he's been playing for 20 years.
Yeah, but there's more emotion. There's more emotion going on in this one, I think. And when you play it, you'll see why. And I think that's why his voice work stands out even more. There's a lot of drama and emotion, and it never, you know, him doing the voice acting, he's great at it because he has been doing it for so long. Right, and it never sounds dramatic or soap opera-y or, you know, it's always really like, oh yeah, totally, I'm into this.
Mm-hmm.
There was the one thing, though, with taking pictures, which is that basically anytime you're out in the city, you can take a picture of, like, any sign and you're probably answering a riddle, and that to me was a little too, like, I would take a picture of something and it would be like, you answered this riddle. And it was like, I didn't even know that was a fucking riddle. And now I've got the answer to it. So that was a little, it was a little over congested.
Did you collect any Pokemon?
I did not collect any Pokemon.
Reference there.
Oh, okay.
I think that got lost on the audience. Sorry,
I had a moment of like,
this needs a sequel.
Speaking of Pokemon Snap, though, on Craigslist.
Here we go.
On Craigslist about a month and a half ago, I think I might have sent this to you. Somebody was selling the Pokemon Snap printer machine from Blockbuster.
That thing was awesome.
$75.
What?
The whole setup.
Locally?
No. What the fuck am I going to do with that? It's huge.
Dude, the nerds would flock to you. They would pay you in, like, video game trinkets.
Another reason not to put one of those in my house. That's probably why the guy was only selling it for $75. He's like, people will not leave me alone. Take this away from me.
They ring your doorbell at 2 a.m.
I would have charged $5 to look at it, $10 to use it.
Also, it had that special printer paper, which I'm sure you can't buy anymore.
Yeah, but. Yeah, you're screwed on that one.
That's some company somewhere in China. You could get them to make.
Or the guy has a room full. He's all like, yeah, you can have the printer for $75, but the paper is $200 a roll.
Yeah, well, it's like Polaroid cameras. Polaroid cameras are about like $10 a piece, even for a really nice antique one. But films like $50 a 10-pack.
But they are remaking it. I mean,
jet model.
Anyway, so back to Batman. You can take pictures, which is neat.
can you use Polaroids?
Does it have Adam West in it?
Does it have Adam West in it?
That's what's been everybody's question. No, it doesn't have Adam West in it.
There needs to be an Xbox Live arcade game that's just like a side-scrolling beat-em-up set to the theme of the 1960s Batman TV show. I would eat that up with a spoon.
You should play Batman Bold, or Brave and the Bold, because that's as close as that you can get.
Yeah, I agree.
But they did have a lot of fucking people in there. I mean, a lot. Like, every time I turned around, I was pleasantly surprised by the introduction of another character, and I never felt like it was forced. Like, okay, we're going to shove another character in here. It always flowed pretty well.
Yeah, the relationships were well thought out.
The one thing that was weird is that everyone they mentioned showed up, except they mentioned Killer Croc. And then, I mean, I don't know, maybe I just managed to not trip into him or something. But I played the game pretty thoroughly, not entirely thoroughly, but I haven't run into him at all. And I've already, you know, beat it.
Didn't he die in the first game?
Nah, nobody ever dies.
I thought there was it wasn't there like a couple of different endings, you know, where you see like a different hand grab the Arkham Asylum, excuse me, where like a different arm would grab the container of that weird chemical that the Joker was using. There was like a crate and like either like Bane's arm or somebody's arm would grab it or
I think it was always Scarecrow's. Bane's. I never heard of it being different arms. I mean, did you guys?
Yeah, I think more companies should do the portal thing, though, where right before a new game comes up, they retcon the old ending, so you have to go back and play the first game.
Right? I think that's incredible. I love that. It's such a nice detail to add in, and it's like so much more possible these days than, you know, when it was just cartridge games.
Huh, something only made possible through DLC.
That's true. Huh. That's true.
I'm so glad that none of us hate DLC, because that would just make this whole thing that I just said seem bad.
DLC, bark!
I don't have it in for DLC. I have it in for overpriced, underworth it DLC. That's all.
Well, let's talk about this now. Let's first start with Deagle. Yes. Deagle, tell me how you felt about the Catwoman levels.
Well, I didn't get to play them because Catwoman wasn't in the box, and I didn't get a copy. I bought a full retail box at Blockbuster, which promised Robin and Catwoman. And
you will get Robin when it comes out. Robin hasn't come out yet.
No, I thought that there's supposed to be a code in the box.
The code gives you access to Robin, but right. Robin's not out yet, so you won't actually get. Yeah.
It's sort of like didn't get any codes?
No, I didn't get anything. Obviously, the work of the Joker.
That is one nice thing about GameStop. Someone before was ragging on, not on here, but someone on our they posted a rag on GameStop, and I like that GameStop gives you a receipt with all of your codes printed out on it, so that if your code for some reason is not in the box, you have it on your receipt. Like, that's really
so. Wait,
cool.
Do you have two codes then?
No,
you're supposed to. I was supposed to get two codes. One for Catwoman and one for Robin. Because
oh, yeah, no, I have, but not Best two Buy. For the same thing.
No, no.
Okay, that's what I was asking. I was asking because they don't print out the Catwoman code.
No, they don't. But if you call that, there's a number on there, and they're like, just call us and we'll give you, if your game did not come for some reason with a Catwoman, like they forgot to put it in, just call us and we'll give you one.
No, it's not a call. It's like you have to jump through a whole bunch of different hoops.
No, GameStop, you don't. Okay. At GameStop, you just call them, and they're like, cool, you just bought this game. Here's a code.
Okay.
So
let me backpedal a little bit and talk about why GameStop is able to do that. And this is where I think people are getting upset. So the Project $10 thing, in case you didn't get it, is the Catwoman DLC. Mm-hmm. So you pay $10, you buy the game new, you don't have to pay $10. You buy the game used, you have to pay $10 to get it. Except when they announced that, or before they announced that, GameStop actually bought licenses to the $10 DLC. So now any used copy of the game past X number of 1,000 units will actually also have the Catwoman DLC if you buy it from GameStop. But not cool. if you buy it from Play and Trade or Best Buy or any of the other people that sell used games now.
Confused yet?
Yes. Well, so the idea is that it's to stave off used game sales, but only from specific retailers.
So, except for the world's largest used game retailer.
But the idea was that most people buy their used games from GameStop, and now they're at least getting $10 out of every...
Yeah, and I don't see why. I mean, if GameStop wants to do that to be competitive in a market of game sales, I don't see how that makes them douchey. That's just good business.
But it's kind of circumventing, I don't know, it's weird is what it is. It's cool that somebody finally figured out how they can get money out of the used game market.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know, it's rubbing people the wrong way that things like what's happening with Deagle are happening. So since he didn't buy it from GameStop, he has to jump through hoops to get it because... Right. Warner Brothers left a code out.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, that's shitty. But on the other hand, if it works out for GameStop, because their thing is like, hey, look, if you buy it from us to begin with, we're not going to screw you over. If for some reason it's missing, we give it to you for free, and we're not going to make you jump through hoops to get it. I don't think that makes GameStop the bad guy. That makes them either, you know, A, good business people, B, considerate to their gamers, or C, pursuing a tactic that they know will help, like, keep them in the running against other stores. I mean, I don't see how that makes them bad.
Here's where I'm at. I'm not necessarily mad at GameStop or Best Buy. I'm, from what I was told, at the beginning there are some cinematics, and it asked me if I had the Catwoman code. I did not. And now I'm told that I missed some of the storyline, because that storyline was contingent upon entering your Catwoman DLC code. And so now I feel like, hey, I spent $60, bought a full price, you know, retail copy, boxed copy, should have had the code, and now I'm missing something about the experience. Yes, I could get the code and maybe go back and restart. I don't feel like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my blame goes on either WB or Rocksteady for...
Well, why did you start the game without the code?
I did not know that I was going to miss part of the storyline. I thought, okay, I don't have the code, I just can't play.
Oh, you thought it was just playable levels?
Yes, the levels.
So now, how does that work? They just take the Catwoman cinematics out of anyone who doesn't have the code?
Apparently.
And here's my thing. So Deagle's the first person I've actually talked to that didn't get the code. And everybody I did talk to that was like, oh, it sucks because you're going to miss all the story and stuff. They specifically bring up a part where one of the levels you save Batman from some peril.
Mm-hmm.
And then they reference that in a cutscene later where Batman's like, oh, yeah, you saved me from that one thing. And my question is,
if you don't have the DLC, then...
Does he ever mention that? Is my question.
Well, it wouldn't...
Their concern is that you'll not only have an incomplete experience, but that it'll reference the fact that you have the incomplete experience.
But I don't think that that would be actually out of alignment, because lots of anything, movies, books, video games, can reference an event, and the implication is that it's an event that occurred that you didn't see. Like, I don't think that that would be a big deal on its own.
It is a big deal when the entirety of the experience you're there for. Like, Batman's never going to the bathroom, and then when he comes out, he references something that happened in the stall. It's that you have been with Batman the past 24 hours, and then all of a sudden Catwoman comes and says, hey, you remember half an hour ago when I saved you? And you're like, no, I don't remember that, and I've been here the entire time.
That specific.
No, that's the thing, is it is that specific.
Well, I'm trying to remember what part that is, because the only part I can think of that fits that is not that big a deal that, like, you wouldn't know that Catwoman saved you or not. Like, because just as easily it could have been anyone else, and it's not... If it's the cinematic I'm thinking of, it's literally, like, 15 seconds long, and it's not a big deal.
Does it happen at the beginning?
No, it happened, like, in the middle, right?
Middle of the game? Okay. See, yeah. I probably don't know, because I didn't really...
Well, that's what I'm saying, is you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know, and that's... To me, that's less of a big deal.
But that cinematic is only meaningful because you've played as Catwoman. Like, I don't want to give anything away, but the if it's the one I'm thinking of, I mean, maybe there's a different one that I'm blanking out on because I've had a long day, but if it's the one I'm thinking of, the only reason that it's meaningful is because you've been playing as Catwoman, and therefore it's meaningful because of what you've been doing as Catwoman. If you were just Batman and you hadn't played Catwoman, it really wouldn't matter because nothing actually happens. You know what I mean? Like, it's not enough of a cinematic to have any meaning to Batman's storyline on its own.
So my thing, as I'm trying to say, is it's less douchey because of that fact. It's like the difference between watching Star Wars and watching the special edition of Star Wars, where they have that stupid scene with young Jabba the Hutt. when that scene wasn't in there, you didn't know.
Right.
And you didn't care, because it's not a very good scene. But when they put that scene in there, it adds to it, but it doesn't take it away when it's not there. Right. They never reference it or anything, and that's okay to me. I don't know.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Hand shot first.
Yeah. So we were talking about this. I'm actually gonna end up renting Batman Arkham Asylum, because I'm not sure if I want to own it.
Asylum or Arkham City?
Sorry, Arkham City. I do own Arkham Asylum. I just don't necessarily want to own it. And I was talking about, well, I could just buy this $10 DLC and I'd be fine with it. But from what I'm hearing, the Catwoman levels don't add enough to it. And if you don't put that code in, it doesn't seem to affect the experience very much.
Okay, here's what I'll say. I don't think it affects your experience playing as Batman. But it is really cool to play as Catwoman, and what's nice about her, like, just as much as her being absent is not significant to Batman, having her to play is kind of significant to your playability of the game, just on, like, it's really cool, because she doesn't move the same way as Batman, she doesn't fight the same way as Batman.
But it also sounds like she's New 52 Catwoman, who's kind of just a flat character, and that, to me, as a comic book fan, sounds very uninteresting.
Which one is New 52 Catwoman?
The one that's been in two issues right now that screws Batman at the end of the first issue.
Screws him figuratively or literally?
Literally. So literally there may be two pictures of her face in the entire issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is all literally just shots of her bra. And then at the end, she porks Batman.
She porks him? Who says porks anymore?
This guy.
Who has two thumbs and uses really old lingo? This guy.
Word.
How does a bat pork a cat?
That's... I don't even want to get into that. That's disgusting.
Here, I'll send you a picture of it.
No! God, no! No, I guess we know what the fucking picture for the podcast is going to be. Pork and cat woman.
Where did they get low to me?
I don't know. I mean, she's... It's, I,
I don't know which one she is because I don't know the comics well enough, but she seems like a full enough character. I mean, she has as much of an in-depth backstory as any of the other characters do in terms of like within the story where you like get little, you know, additional things about their backstories and then you read it as like a long thing. She has just as much as that, and she doesn't feel, like, super vapid or flat. Like, she dresses provocatively, but they don't play that up in, like, a, you know, disgusting, like, she's just a sexual object kind of way. So she's not two-dimensional that way. Also, she, like, has her own whole thing with Poison Ivy, and the people walking around talk about how they used to have a thing, which I don't know which comic that's from, but... So she's that Catwoman, if that helps.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, she's the Arkham City Batman, which is Catwoman. But I'm just saying, it sounds like her character is too similar to the new empty sex object Catwoman.
I would try to play it on someone else's system if you could, because I would say don't sell it short without playing it. I mean, her movements and her actions and what you can do as her is really cool. Also, there are trophies that only Catwoman can pick up. So as far as picking up Enigma's Riddler trophies. You're not going to be able to complete them all if you don't.
But hers don't, from what I understand, factor into seeing the Riddler at the end.
Do they not?
No, hers are separate trophies.
Huh. No, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
You can get to the Riddler at the end without having collected her trophies. Huh.
Well, I don't know then. I mean, it is interesting also because she's the only other person hanging out in Arkham City who's not a bad guy.
Until Robin comes out.
Yeah, and but he doesn't really... I mean, he comes and then leaves again. He's, like, not stuck in the city.
Mm-hmm. Is it Robin or Nightwing?
Both.
You can play as both. You have to... I don't know. The GameStop's deal is that you have to... I mean, this is getting a little bit into question answering because I know this is one of our mailbag questions, but GameStop's deal is that you pay $6.99, I think, for each one. So you can choose which ones you want. Like, you can get Robin or Nightwing or both if you want, for if you pay for both. Mm. And what's cool is that they're not just different skins on, like, the same animatronics. It's like each one of them has their own fighting style, their own moves.
Well, yeah,
their
for
own
$7. Yeah.
Well, no, right. Well, that was the one thing that made me sort of sad. The guy at GameStop... The one guy who's the manager knows everything was like, of course they have their own different things. But the guy who was originally trying to sell them to me was like, well, no, they're just different skins. It's the same fighting style. And I was like, why the fuck would anyone pay $7 for a skin then? Right. And the manager walked by and was like, no, it's not a skin. It's an actual character that you can play. I was like, that's what I freaking thought. Thank you.
Does Robin have his own gadgets?
I think so.
Oh, okay. That would be cool. Then.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but they make it seem like that would be the case.
So let's actually bring up that question you were talking about. Samurai Kangaroo asks, how do you feel about store-exclusive DLC? I'm confused about where to buy Batman Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, whichever. I don't even know where to buy Arkham Asylum because the Joker is included in that here.
Only on PS3.
I know wherever I'll get it, I'll be missing out on something. Seems
not
like a
true.
Bad way of doing things. Instead of rewarding pre-orders, they're punishing people who don't buy from a certain store. Except
not
all
true.
You're missing out on are skins you can't use until you beat the game.
But that's
so
not actually true. Because the deal is how it seems to be, and this is another plus to GameStop, okay? Mm-hmm. So I think that
it's GameStop cast now.
No. And
they're,
whatever.
They're
I mean, I'm not saying
they're
not always great, but to their credit in this case. For one, I think that it does make sense for stores to offer different DLC because that's how they try and like create a fan base. That's normal. That's exactly the same thing that 360 versus PS3 does, is that they try to create incentives to like get you to want to go to them first or instead.
Sure.
So that's
why
that's
not
normal.
Just use gift cards? Why
that's
not
part
just
of the industry. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But GameStop, to their credit, what they offer is everything, and the only difference is that, like, whereas some stores offer something for free, GameStop offers their thing for free, and then you can pay. So, like, Best Buy was offering you get Robin and Nightwing. GameStop was offering you get Catwoman, you get the Joker's extra map pack thing,
right.
You get a copy of the movie, and then if you pay them some money, you get Robin and – but not a lot of money. You get
Robin.
But you
can also just pay that exact same price on Xbox Live when you get home.
Okay, yeah, fine. But it's nice. I mean, like I said, for me, it's nice to walk into GameStop, buy it from them, because if I know if any of the codes don't work, I can call them up right then and there, and they'll give me a new code. And if I buy it off Xbox Live and it doesn't work for some reason, I mean, that would be odd and rare. But if for some reason it doesn't work, I have to, like, sit on the phone for fucking half an hour to try and get through to anyone at Xbox, and then they won't even help me.
What about the games we're going to talk about, Forza 4, where you got certain cars if you ordered it from certain retailers?
They all did this. Like Warhammer did the same thing. I got mine from GameStop specifically because they had the Space Wolf skin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
That's normal. I mean, you choose what you want. Like, that's the same as choosing PS3 over Xbox for certain games.
And here's the thing that Blue brought up is, why not gift cards? Because gift cards cost GameStop money, and skins don't cost anybody anything.
True.
But doesn't it cost some sort of the stores something to get the rights to it?
Well, so they have sort of broad contracts with publishers, but basically now there are parts of these teams that the idea is, all right, we have some sort of ambassador program with these retailers. We need to give them some sort of content. Skins are basically, we model up a new Batman, we make sure the rigging works, and then get it out there.
Also, from a physical economic standpoint, there's zero cost to digital content, whereas there is a cost to, okay, we got to make up a bunch of GameStop gift cards to hand, like, to put money on and hand out to people.
Yeah,
but the whole thing, if you do that, and I am in agreement with the gift cards, but if you do that, you're getting repeat business. If someone has a card, even with, you know, $5 on it, they're going to come back and probably spend $55 or trade in, win that next game. So that works as an incentive for repeat business.
If everybody gives away $20 gift cards, then you're selling a $40 game at that point.
But I don't understand why we're saying you would need a gift card, because I could have bought the game from, let's say not Best Buy, because it would be redundant in the scenario I'm about to set up, but I could have gone and bought the game from wherever and then gone to GameStop and just bought, like, been like, hey, I want the Nightwing and the Robin, you know, DLC. And just bought that, and they would have let me do it. So, like, what would be the point of a gift card in that instance if I can just go in and hand them my money?
Or what's the point of the $60 game anymore? What's the point of the $60 game anymore? Everything's incomplete.
No, it's not incomplete. It's that they add stuff that they couldn't add before. That's not the same thing.
What's the point of the $60 games? Games, if you factor in inflation, are cheaper now than they've ever been and more expensive to produce than they've ever been.
That's true.
The reason so many studios are failing now is because they need to figure out ways to keep making money off of a game after it sells.
It's true. And that's DLC.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with just, you know, run-of-the-mill DLC. I have a problem with the bullshit that we're talking about with Arkham City.
How is that bullshit that they give you extra stuff? Yeah. They didn't have to give you that stuff at all.
Yeah, so would you have rather them just say, all right, skins are coming out at some point. Good luck.
No, because this way, I mean, I get extra characters to play with, I get a movie to watch, I get a map to play on. They could have not designed any of that.
Well, I think part of the problem is they were playing up Catwoman for so long, and then a week or two before release, they said, oh, by the way, this is going to be DLC.
But it's not entirely DLC that comes with it.
Yeah.
The problem is
Deagle's case. It's a rare case, but that is a problem that he was promised something that he paid for and didn't get. Like, he essentially paid $60 for $50 worth of product.
Right.
Which
is fixable. I mean, what it means is getting the code and restarting the game. And so the more unfortunate thing is that there wasn't an easy, convenient way for you to instantly be like, hey, bozos, I don't have a code. And for them to go, oh, sorry, here you go.
Right.
But, you know, there are some cases when store exclusive DLC just doesn't make it out. I mean, with WWE 2011, I believe Best Buy had Bret Hart, and they never released Bret Hart as DLC, I don't believe. I think that was the one piece of content, one or two pieces of content that was held out from the, like, season pass.
Did the developer close? Because that sounds like a developer closure issue.
No, basically,
it was a THQ, but every store had killed
a lot of developers in the past couple of years.
No, they still got SmackDown, like the best thing they have.
They still got 2012 coming out the pipeline.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like Walmart had, I believe it was the WWE Tribute to the Troops arena that they have, you know, when they film a event over in Iraq for the holidays. Mm-hmm. Walmart had that. GameStop had, I want to say it was like some different attire for somebody. Toys R Us had different attire for The Undertaker. And then Best Buy had Bret Hart as a playable wrestler. And when they released a like a season pass about a month or two later, I think it was, you got all of the content. But I believe Bret Hart was left out of that. And there are some cases where store exclusive DLC doesn't ever see release if you don't get a code for it. And well, that basically leaves you with the feeling that you're buying an incomplete game.
Well, I mean, that's sort of an outdated practice now, because there especially in earlier Xbox launch games, there were a lot of those situations. Dead Space actually had a suit that wasn't available until very recently. And it was Halloween the year after it came out. There was a 30-day span where if you were online, you got the Obsidian suit for free, and then they took it down, and it was gone. And it's back up now because I just re-downloaded it. But if you didn't get it, it was gone forever. And that sucked. But that's something that I think people have grown out of now. I mean, when you think about it, it started with the Dreamcast, and it's had to grow up into what it is now.
Right.
And they were bound to make some mistakes, and it's still not a perfect system. But that doesn't mean
you know,
it should...
I mean... It's like, the problem is, it's like, I mean, with the Dreamcast now, I think Fire Pro Wrestling D had the ability to download some extra moves or possibly some wrestlers or something like that. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the servers that they were using for it are gone now, and it's pretty much impossible to get your Dreamcast on the internet anymore anyways.
Yeah,
but you also figured it's like they learned from that, though, because the problem with the Dreamcast was everybody had their own servers, and now you have... two systems. You have Xbox Live Arcade and you have the PlayStation Network, and those two systems are in charge of storing all that data, and they're integrated into the PSP, they're integrated into the Vita, they're going to be integrated into the PlayStation 4. Like, moving ahead, we're not going to have new consoles, we're going to have the same old services that play the same old games and also new ones. So I mean, this idea that these servers aren't going to be there forever is kind of moot.
But also, I think that some
Chrome House says hello. Chromehound says hello.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, it may not be 5 years from now, it may not be 10 years from now, but sooner or later, Xbox Live is going to go. It's and
no way.
The content.
I think these services are going to be around, especially Xbox Live. If they continue to charge for it, there'll be people 20 years from
The one thing I don't understand, going back to Chromehound, was here's a game mainly multiplayer. Obviously the Xbox 360 isn't dead yet, and they cut it. You cannot play online anymore.
But again, that was an early launch, well, close to launch game.
Months after. Here's enough.
Yeah, but that whole first year, everything was completely different than it is now.
Right, but I don't know. When you pay for a service like Xbox Live, you would expect at least for them to save some server space just in case... You know, maybe you had a group of friends that was into that game.
But that's what I'm saying, is back then, Microsoft wasn't in charge of game servers. They were just in charge of the content servers. It's just like all the old NBA games you can't play.
But I think something that's being overlooked, which is sort of like... I feel like the gaming world has gotten a little bit spoiled, and they've kind of forgotten where things originated. Because the thing is, once upon a time... you paid blank, whatever, X amount of dollars. Let's not have a number because of inflation, so it's comparable, whatever. But you paid X amount of money for a game, and it was a game that you played. And unless you really, really loved it, you got bored of it at some point, and you either kept it in a box, which is still sitting in your top shelf of your closet, or you sold it back to somewhere else, or you traded it to a friend because once upon a time you couldn't really like trade back used games. So... at some point, the invention of DLC came about that was like, hey, let's, like, everyone wants to rag on DLC like it's this evil venture, but let's think about where it really comes from. So they were trying to create replayability for games. They were trying to give you more bang for your buck in the long run. I mean, it was something you had to pay for, but every now and then they throw you a freebie and they give you something that gives you X plus amounts of hours of fun for sort of a nominal cost, really. And if it turns out that at the end of the day, at some point, either the servers go offline or you have tired of the DLC because you have played it through, you still got something extra that originally, back in the old days, you never would have had. So I think that there's like this misscope about what DLC is and where it came from. It's something that gives you something more.
Unless, of course, you go to my local Walmart where they still sell new and sealed copies of Chrome Hounds. You buy one and you realize, hey, I'm fucked.
Okay, whatever. In some instances that happens, but I'm just saying that in the long run, DLC, and it works for the video game company because they get to make a little more money off a game, which keeps them going. I'd rather pay a little more for a game and have that company stick around and keep making good games, assuming they make good games, of course, than to just be like, oh, well, they went out of business because I was too cheap to pay for my DLC.
But, you know, going back to what I was saying about, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years, Xbox Live won't be there anymore, possibly. Look at the original Xbox. You can't play any original Xbox games on Xbox Live anymore because the service changed. And what's to say that can't happen with the Xbox 360's iteration of Xbox Live?
But that wouldn't mean Live would go away. That just means you'd be playing different things on it.
If Xbox Live is gone, you know, if the Xbox Live as it is today is gone.
But that's the thing, it's a moneymaker.
They're not going to dump.
Well, the industry's changed. They're not. The console is no longer the important thing. It's the upkeep of that service. And to be perfectly honest, if one of the services were to go away, I think it would be PSN, just because I think it's in a lot of Japanese publishers' best interest to get rid of the PS1 classics and some of the PSP games, because Square in particular. A large part of their income comes from re-releasing old games, and they're not
going to... All right, which one of you has the cops coming for you?
Oh, that's actually me. I'm sorry. but no, I mean, that's where it's going to get kind of tricky, is when these services start to cost these companies money. And then the question is, if I downloaded Final Fantasy VII for PS1 Classics, and they decide that it's still going to work on the Vita, and Square decides to pull the license so that they can re-release it, what's going to happen to that? That's where things get tricky. It's not when the service goes away. It's when publishers start to renegotiate licenses.
Is that the reason why there's no PS1 compatibility with the Vita?
The official statement is that there is not yet PS1 compatibility.
Okay.
Which makes me think that they're going to put PS1 compatibility in and then try to resell you the same games. That is where it gets douchey.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that we hear, and rightly so, we hear a lot of complaints on this show about DLC, and I think that people...
Probably from me.
No, from listeners and readers, and I think that people need to step back and think about, especially younger gamers, like, you know, gamers who have been around a long time maybe have an easier time remembering the old days of gaming. Younger gamers need to step back, like, blue... And keep in mind that once upon a time, you didn't get anything extra ever. So the fact that you're getting anything extra, even if it costs... I mean, don't get me wrong, some DLC is really stupid. And sometimes it is obviously a money-making ploy. But not all DLC is garbage. And where it originally came from was, how can a game company make a little more money so that they can keep going and deliver something to you that gives you replayability of a game? Because I can't tell you how many games I played once upon a time, and as much as I wanted to play them again, it was like, but I know it cold. Like,
yeah.
I don't. It's boring at this point. If I could have had something else to show up to make it a little more entertaining, that would have made my day.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, we had Game Sharks, and that turned Mario purple. And that was our skins.
That's true.
And that was our skins. But, you
know, yeah. You know, in our day, skins were shit, so you should just shut up and enjoy what you got.
But, you know, one thing is that with all the DLC, and, you know, if some DLC disappears for whatever reason, it's like when you played a game like The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past or something like that, you got the complete experience. And with all the DLC that's out there, the store exclusive DLC, which may or may not get released, whatever, the games of today don't feel as complete as the games from previous
generations. I call super bullshit. So you
Party owner.
Hey, I'm back. Are you guys back?
Sean, the vehemence of your super bullshit destroyed Skype.
Apparently.
That was some super
explain,
bullshit.
Now you have to explain your super bullshit, which destroyed
That's
going to
be
Skype.
The name of the show.
Oh.
Super bullshit. Breaking Skype.
Anyway, as I was saying, I call super bullshit on the oh, I'm not getting a complete experience comment, because it's like if you watch a movie, you won't watch a movie
wait,
in theaters
wait,
because
the
you know scenes got deleted.
Wait, was that the like quote that Blue said? I don't think he said a complete experience. I said that it didn't.
No, it's
you
the,
say
it wasn't. It was the complete. It wasn't the complete experience. It was the complete game. It's basically. It's yeah. like say something small was taken.
But it's not the complete game. That's not the issue. The issue is you do get the complete game, and then you get more. It's like you get a cake with icing, and then you get more icing. It's not less of a complete cake because you get extra.
Let me play devil's advocate here. What is the incentive in offering a lot of icing when you can charge for it? Why not just add a smidgen? And so there could be this slippery slope where people are kind of cutting back. And so one of the things I think we're seeing these single player campaigns that are maybe 4, 5, 6 hours,
mm-hmm.
you know, and maybe that could be, I don't think we have any evidence to support that, but that could be a repercussion of, you know, DLC.
But I don't think that's actually happening.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so either. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's sitting here going, I'm going to tell this story and then cut it short because I'm a douchebag. Like, you got to remember, these are creatives that are in these studios.
I think they're saying
the ones making Modern Warfare.
I could tell a story, and then I can add this story, this $10 story, and here's another $10 story on top of it that integrates with that.
Like
Mass Effect. You're talking about episodic content right
sure.
there, which is something mm-hmm. completely different.
Okay.
People do that, and they usually charge less for it.
Yeah, but
that is
but
different.
If the game, but it's basically. Looking at the perspective that I've had with this is the complete. I view the complete game as being whatever is printed on the disc, and if there's no longer a way to access that, if there's no longer a way to access like the DLC content, it's taken down, yada yada yada. Then the experience that maybe built the game, built up the game's reputation, is no longer. Possibly.
But you just contradicted yourself. You said that what you think the complete game is what's printed on the disc. Well, that is what you get and without the DLC.
Yeah.
So if the DLC shows up and is then taken away, you're still left with the complete game printed on the disc.
Yeah, but with all, what content is taken out of the supposed complete game?
Nothing. You lose extras that you got that were a delight to begin with. See, that's what I'm saying. Rather than being grateful for this extra delight that you are given, you're being all kinds of like, I got cheated because you gave me something and then took it away. That's not very grateful.
But what
extra,
I think,
let's face it, the extra delights would have been in the it would have been shoved into
the
game.
No, they would have because they're created later. That's the thing.
Regardless,
I mean, of previous
whether,
generations, the previous generations when DLC
right
wasn't.
Not, I think that that is the mentality that many gamers have today.
Well, it's spoiled gratitude, and it should go away.
It may be, but it still exists.
Well, that's great, but then I don't feel bad for people who cry about it if they're going to be ungrateful for what they're getting.
Yeah, I mean,
Santa
I mean,
Claus
it's like,
on the podcast.
You've been naughty. No gifts for you.
But you know,
$10 coal.
Horse armor. Horse armor it's for like all. It's all a good night.
It's like you go buy Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then somebody tells you that there's the Young Indiana Jones show out there. And you get pissy because you don't feel like you're getting the entire Indiana Jones experience when the TV show is just a really bad lanyap. And you can go out and buy that if you want it,
Sean,
but it's not going to take away from
worst,
the fact that...
That is the most trolling analogy I've ever heard in my life.
I liked
it's the
it.
Truth.
No, that is
I
awful.
Liked it.
That is awful. That is some super bullshit good. Right there.
That's some super bullshit.
The super bullshit has been called.
I'm just saying, like, it sounds like it's coming from more of a... It sounds like it's coming from more of a psychological completionist attitude than an actual genuine.
Maybe it's some kind of a twisted sense of entitlement. Maybe it's just that I'm maybe too traditional. But it's like when I see it's like.
Did you play Pokemon when it first came out on Game Boy?
Oh yeah, yeah, and I know exactly what this.
Yeah, did you feel cheated that you only had one?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I ended up being a complete sucker and a tool for the franchise. I ended up buying them both eventually. But, you know, that's a good point. I mean, it's, you know, I'm before DLC, it's like the topic of extra content. What isn't extra, you know, oh, get some extra content for a game. You know, that option wasn't there. It's like, and that inspired, I guess you could use the word inspired, developers to make as good of an experience as possible. Inspired developers to throw in the kitchen sink.
What's
the point of tossing in the kitchen sink when I can charge $5 for it?
But that's a really cynical view, because on the one hand, you could... Well, no, seriously, so let's look at it, okay? There's never a one objective truth, right? So that's one possible way to see it. The other possible way to see it is the developers come up with the best story they can come up with at the time without spending 30 years making a game, because that would disappoint everybody. So in the amount of time they have, they come up with the best game they can, and they release that to people. Then somebody goes home that night and a week later has this magnificent dream where they think something up that they didn't put in originally. And they're like, oh, God, guys, this would be so cool. Yeah, you're right. That would be totally cool. Hey, let's create that story arc and turn it into DLC and put it out there and sell it to everybody. And then they can also play that. So on the one hand, you have your view, which is that, oh, they would have tried harder were that option not there. But on the other hand, what you're not thinking about is maybe, and I'm not saying either one, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying the other side of that, the other possibility that other companies may undergo is that some companies that put games out probably think like you're thinking, and some companies that put games out went back in the old days when they had that wonderful dream where they're like, oh, man, this would have been so cool. They were kicking themselves because they were like, fuck us to death. We didn't put that in the game, and now nobody will ever see this ever. And now they have an opportunity to go, cool, let's put this out there, and now someone can play it.
But you know what I will never see? The end to Dark Souls. I'm sorry.
You'll never see the end?
Yes, I will never see the end.
Yeah. What I'm saying, well, before we move on to... Before we move on, I just want to bring up one other thing that was the best argument I've seen in both directions was when talking about small DLC that quote unquote wouldn't be included. Someone brought up costumes, and as an argument, someone brought up Spider-Man for the PS1. Because if you remember that, there were close to 50 goddamn costumes you could unlock in that game.
Sure.
And they didn't do anything. They were just skins, whatever, except for I think one of them made you invincible if you got all the other skins. But the reason for that turns out to be that was back when a studio was a set group of people, and that was done by Neversoft, who did the Tony Hawk games. Mm-hmm. And they had a team of people whose job it was to make the skateboarders in the Tony Hawk games. And so when you make a Spider-Man game and Spider-Man's the only playable character, you have to have this half staff do something or let them go. And that's why there were so many costumes in that. I just heard that argument. And I thought that was really interesting.
Couldn't you be Tony Hawk in that game as well?
No.
In the Spider-Man game?
You could be Spider-Man. Tony Hawk
versus Spider.
Yeah. I got it backwards. Okay.
But it's like, thank you for reminding me of costumes. I mean,
beating dead horse armor.
This is the bad DLC. It's like I'll just want to set the record straight. I don't have a problem with good DLC. Good DLC that doesn't make me feel ripped off.
Good.
Either by buying the full price game or by buying the DLC content. I don't have a problem with stuff like that. It's stuff like Super Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 4's costumes. It's stored on the disc, and the developer is locking them away solely for the purpose of extorting more money out of you.
Don't buy it.
And in every case, you have a little douchebaggery. No matter what cool invention comes out, you're going to always have somebody who takes it and makes it lame.
Send them a message, don't buy it. And
yeah, that's exactly what I ended up doing. And, you know, it's I guess part of it's like I'm going from Dead or Alive Ultimate, which had like about 100 to 120 costumes for its characters. And I might be even being conservative with that estimate versus Street Fighter 4, which has a couple of palettes, you know, like 10 palette swaps for one costume. And if you want a second costume, you have to cough up the extra cash because it's on the disc, but you need to pay for it.
There's a difference between owning data and owning a license to that data. I can send you about a billion copies of TouchShare, which is the software my company makes, and you can have those CDs. I don't care if you own those CDs. It's the license that's important, and I'll charge you a couple grand for that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you own the CDs that have the binary code on it doesn't mean anything.
It's true.
But, you know, I feel that if you pay $50 or $60 for a game, whatever is on whatever playable content, if you will, that will ever end up in the game should be yours.
But see, when you sign there's a license agreement that's in the little pamphlet that you get in your game. You buy that content to not have to download it.
If your delivery method is
your problem, then
I think we're angering the gaming gods.
What's the matter?
Guys, the internet's getting weird. I think that we're angering the gaming gods, and we should move on from this topic.
Dark Souls.
Dark Souls.
Speaking of anger.
Nice segue.
That is a sequel to Demon's Souls.
Yes. And yes, I completely understand what they're trying to do. And I congratulate them on the attempt. That doesn't mean it's fun for me. To me, the game, most games are, you know, you learn by failure, right? But in this game, you fail all the time, at least for me. Maybe I wasn't taking it slow enough.
No,
but
you're doing it absolutely right.
Okay. I walk up the stairs, big bowling ball, takes off half my life, walk in a room, boom, fire trap. And nothing really, I mean, there are signs, you know, within the game to warn you. And those have been kind of circumvented by people that say, hey, go this way. There's a big, big mean boss that way. I understand the inventory system is supposed to be a little wonky and convoluted to represent, you know, a real life scenario. When you're drinking a, you know, HP regenerating fluid that's supposed to take time and it's not supposed to be instant, I get it. But I didn't have fun with the game.
No.
But you didn't have fun with the first one either. That's why I reviewed it.
I didn't. And I'm saying that from a very, you know, subjective sense.
This is what you did with White Knight Chronicles, too. It's like, man, I really didn't like that first game. Hey, it Sean, is this game any different? No, it's not. All right, I'm going to go spend $60 on it.
but at least he gives it a chance.
Yeah, I figure I owe it a fair share.
Netflix. Versus Gamefly. Whatever.
I do like Dark Souls because I know that when I walk up a set of stairs, I'm supposed to look up.
I looked
so that
up.
I'll see bowling balls coming at me.
I looked up and I saw that damn thing, but my damn character was too slow to get out of the fucking way.
Did you pick the knight?
Yeah, of course. But then I also picked the...
Do not pick the knight. Yeah, pick like the wanderer or the thief.
Don't pick the character you want to play as. Pick the good one.
I was a pyromancer later, but you only get a limited amount of charges. So I was
you should always pick like when you're starting out. It tells you to pick the knight when you're starting out, which is the worst idea because he's always over encumbered.
So this is the game fucks you from the start. So you pick me.
Yeah, the idea is he's got the highest defense, and I think he says the highest starting level. So that's why they say pick him.
And
he's got
good offense melee skills too.
Yeah, but I always go with the wanderer because he's a base like mid level stats. Mm-hmm. But he's got all of his mobility. He's got a pretty decent starting weapon, and he starts with a shield. And you can't go wrong with that. You don't have to fuck with magic and MP right at the beginning and all that crap. You just go and hit stuff with your sword, and you can roll around, and you don't have to worry about like situations like that where you see something coming, you can't dodge out of the way because you're already over encumbered.
Right. My other problem too was the first boss. The second time you meet him when you're on that ledge and it kind of crumbles. I was playing on the 360, and the frame rate just took a huge dump. And you always say, well, frame rate doesn't matter.
Frame rate does matter in a game like that.
Yeah, it totally mattered, and it was driving me nuts because I was trying to make my way over those little vessels and stuff like that, and I must have died about 20 times.
I never had a frame rate problem with it. My problem is I am enjoying
it. Wait,
but
you didn't have a problem with it, or you didn't see the frame rate?
I never had a frame rate drop. But I'm playing it on the PS3, and I know that's the lead system for it, but I hadn't heard other people talk about frame rate drops on the 360 version.
I was going up the stairs where there wasn't a giant bowling ball, and nothing really around, and it would drop.
Maybe your 360 is dying. All these poor games that you've reviewed and dinged because of the frame rate issues. Maybe it's all just you. Maybe you're having strokes.
Mini strokes. I think that's some super bullshit, but
no. So much bullshit.
But I actually do enjoy it. I'm actually taking a break from it though, because Demon's Souls, I spent 3 days just plowing through that game the first time.
Right.
And my girlfriend's going on vacation next month, so I'm saving the rest of Dark Souls for when I can just poop sock the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like
poop sock? One. What the fuck does that mean?
It's when you never heard of sock.
No, poop socking is when you just sit there and you play a game without getting up. And it's called poop socking because the idea is that you have to be hooked up to like a poop catheter so that.
Oh, Jesus. Poop.
That's.
You've never heard that before?
No, Jesus, that's disgusting.
Makes sense.
Oh, my God. The idea of pooping into a big tube sock is like the worst mental image I've ever had contrived for me. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
I think it would be difficult. But
you're not a yes. Special poop socking.
Oh God, this is getting worse.
It's a human centipede.
What kind of a chair do you use? Do you find? Can you use your? Can you sit in your regular recliner or whatever?
Listen,
and use a poop
I doubt
sock
it. I've never literally poop socked. But I imagine you need a special chair for it.
Deagle, that's socked. Terrible that you brought up the human centipede, because that actually is probably the closest you could get without actually sewing two people together. That's repugnant.
The human poop sock.
Now 12 people. A couple things I did like about Dark Souls is when you get shot with an arrow, it does the old Steve Martin arrow through the head thing. Where you have like an arrow sticking through your head. And the other thing I like is when you kill enemies, they linger around your feet, much like socks. You can kind of kick them around like a soccer ball. That is fun.
Yeah.
So
I will say, though, that so far I do not like the checkpointing.
The fires, what do they call them?
I think the idea of it is good, and I think where they place it makes sense to get the same feeling,
right,
or as close to the same feeling as the first game as you can. But the fact that they're checkpoints does something weird to my brain that makes me use them differently. And so far, I don't like it.
Were you like using them, or were you bypassing them?
No, I was using them.
When you use them, for the listeners that haven't played, all the enemies respawn.
Yeah, but I haven't gotten to a point where that makes a huge strategic difference.
Okay.
But it's things like the very first one's actually a really good example. It's right before that first boss, and then you're supposed to go in and not fight that first boss. And then you come back around to that point, and it's kind of like the halfway point before you collect all your items and go back to fight the first boss. Right. And then you fight the first boss, and that door opens back up, and then it's there again. So it's sort of a central point with all these events that are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's a checkpoint there, and you've got this mindset that there's going to be another checkpoint, I ended up ignoring it and just going forward because, hey, there's a checkpoint there. There's probably another one coming up. And that's more of a me thing than the game thing. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they placed it in the proper place because you do pass it so much. But like I said, the fact that it's a checkpoint puts me in this different mentality than I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I don't know, it feels weird. I like the hub world way that they did the first one better. Yeah. But that I think that's just a personal preference thing.
Cool. It's poop socking. Speaking of poop socking, we got a little
Super
Forza.
Bullshit. Poop socking is super bullshit.
You're still thinking about that, Sage, and Human Centipede.
Gross.
Blue, take us into Forza 4 talk. Take us out of this scary world.
I'll try to turn this car around and point it in the right direction.
Yes.
On a whim, I picked up Forza 4 because Kmart had it on sale, where if you bought the game, you get a $20 gaming credit with it.
All right. One question. Did you buy the pack? Did you buy the DLC pack?
No, not yet.
Forza Pass. Okay, not yet.
Not yet. I am thinking about it. It's rare that a game actually gets me thinking, yeah, I want to buy everything it has to offer.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I got about, 480-something cars left that I haven't bought already that I need to buy that are just on the two game discs alone. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's... And I will say that before, Forza 4, I was using my original 360 hard drive, which was, it was a launch drive, it was 20 gigabytes, and basically ended up being about 13 after, after all the formatting or whatever. And GameStop had a sale going where if you bought a 120 gigabyte hard drive, used 120 gigabyte hard drive, it was $25. Mm-hmm. And needing a new fridge, because I mean, let's face it, I think I had to blow away MLB bobblehead pros to review Burnout Crash, and I think I had to blow away Burnout Crash to put on the extra content from the second disc of Forza 4 into the 360, because basically it's disc one has the main gameplay modes, you know, the single player and 250 cars, and the online play as well, and 250 cars. And then there is a second disc, which has another about, I think they said it was around 250 cars or something like that. And the cars for the Auto Vista mode, which is the mode where the cars are super detailed and you can go in and hear the guy from Top Gear say, and the DeLorean, this piece of shit left people trapped inside due to faulty electrical systems and, you know, stuff like that.
It's kind of has an English accent, though. You made him sound. He has an English accent.
Oh, so I should be talking like this? Something like this?
A little bit more London.
Not an English accent.
A little bit more London. Close enough. What do you think of that mode? Is it just kind of a waste of time, or are you enjoying it?
Honestly,
I love the Auto Vista mode. I haven't played a ton of it, but one thing that I was not that crazy about was the controls. They felt a little too floaty for me, and I'm not sure if that's because it was kind of designed to be a Kinect showpiece, and then they made it function on the controller or what. But it didn't feel quite as responsive, with the controller as I would have wanted it to be.
That's weird. I heard the exact opposite, like that it's too floaty in the Kinect mode, so people were using the controller.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
I think it's interesting, yeah.
I like it, and I haven't even used the Kinect mode because I just don't like the Kinect. I have a Kinect hooked up and everything. It's just like, I will use the controller. Screw it.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, I love the mode. I love how detailed the cars are. It's like you can open up the hood and check out the engines and actually, sit inside and turn on the ignition. It's a really neat technical showpiece for the game. Mm-hmm. Speaking of being a technical showpiece, the graphics in Forza 4 are absolutely jaw-dropping.
Especially the lighting.
Mm-hmm. I'll just stare at the taillights of some of these cars because they just look so detailed and so realistic.
You know what I particularly like is when you're in kind of the snowy levels. I don't know where you're at, like Norway or somewhere in Europe. And there's a glare on the snow right in front.
Yeah.
And little stuff like that where for a moment it just almost confuses me because I'm seeing it as realism. And sometimes, you turn a corner and you just can't quite see because, of the lighting or the sun's in your eyes. Stuff like that. It's really amazing.
I love that we're getting this on some sort of recording because, man, do you remember when Shenmue came out? And you could pick things up out of drawers and just look at it. And I must have looked at one of those goddamn oranges for like 20 minutes going, man, this is so real.
If you look that up now,
it looks like poop.
But yeah, I did that with those virtual fighter figures.
I know, right?
I did it with Batman. Every day, coughing that into that machine.
Yeah. The one thing, and let me know if I'm doing it wrong or am I missing something that bothered me, I guess my one minor complaint with Forza 4, when you win certain races, you get a selection of cars. You get like four cars, and they're all fairly comparable. They're in the same class and everything.
When you win a race or when you upgrade your driver level?
No, when you win a race. They'll give you a selection of like three or four, maybe five different cars to choose from, right? But they don't give you stats for them. So you don't know, torque or horsepower or things like that. Yes, they are, relatively comparable. But I want to know, like, which one has two more, HP.
Yeah. It makes you wonder why they didn't just use the same interface that they use for the garage, where you have the cars like kind of like over to the left a little bit, and then you have a box dedicated on the right side just with the stats that you can flip between the horsepower or the
because or it the gives you so much information otherwise. Except it, mm-hmm. it
don't know. They just tried to keep it simple during that stage. So, no, I mean, not, certainly not a deal killer. I love it. I love the, I'm not sure how many of the assists, if you turned off any. I turned off most of them.
I think the only assist I've really left on, I believe, is the breaking guideline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the only one I've really
Wait, the guideline or the, what is it, the auto, not the auto breaking, but the, the non-skid kind of breaking?
Yeah. Traction controller.
Yeah. And one of the things is when you turn off many of those, you know, training wheel like devices, Forza 4 for me, that really nails that sensation. You know, when you're in a corner, you're really redlining it, because once you take off, you know, all those, you can, you know, rev it up and you can put yourself in a pretty dangerous situation. But one of the things is it really articulates that sensation of you are on the cusp of control. At any minute, if you, you know, oversteer, if you're giving it too much throttle, you can pull out. And it really, through both feedback through the controller, and I, you know, I'm thinking of the new wheel controller, which doesn't offer that, but, you know, through the visuals, it really articulates like where you're at in that particular turn. No other game has done that for me as well as Forza 4.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing where, I mean, Forza 4 is the sort of game that really just, I mean, I grew up, you know, playing Gran Turismo 2 and Gran mm-hmm. Turismo 3. I bought a PlayStation 2 just to play Gran Turismo 3.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for simulation racing games, but I've never been, I wouldn't say I'm quite that good at it, especially after going online and trying to race a respectable way. It's like I usually end up in like in the lower echelon of the starting grid.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like with Forza 4, and I guess the Forza series in general, it's like with, you know, with the guideline, the braking guideline and all the assists, it's like you're truly able to tailor the experience just to suit your own desires with it.
Sure.
And but yeah, I mean, I mentioned online, so I guess I'll jump into that. I, for the first time, bought Xbox Live Gold. I found a 1 year card, one of the sealed up plastic ones before they increased the price.
Mm-hmm.
I actually found that at Kmart, and I used the $20 gaming credit I got from buying Forza 4 to get the 1 year Live Gold, and it's kept me up far, far too late some nights just playing the tag mode, which is basically, there are a couple of different tag modes. It's like pass the it, where if you tag someone, you pass the it to them, mm-hmm. and whoever has the most time loses, as it loses. And then there's the time where you have to hold on to the it for the longest. But the one that's really sucked me in is the virus mode. And basically, one person starts off as it, and everybody else has a 5 second head start. And as somebody gets tagged, it's like the IT team starts growing and growing and growing. And people just go crazy with this mode. It's like when the race first starts out, it's like half the people will be going forward. The other half will be going in reverse and start going around the track the opposite way. And it's the mode's a part of something called the playground. And that's the perfect name for it. It's like there's this set of rules here, but just like any game on the playground, it's like the rules kind of break down, and there's just like, it just ends up being like this thin representation, this thin shell of what it used to be, of what the original game was originally going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think the goal is like the drive, you know, I mean, the goal is just to drive around and not get tagged, I guess. But it's like some people go the right way, you know, go the right way around the track, and the others, well, it's like they'll come around the opposite way, and like, there are times when two people who aren't it will just go head on into each other, and then because of going head on, you know, going head on, one or both of them will get tagged. And I mean, there's just something about this mode that's just absolutely hooked me. I mean, it's got all of its teeth in me. I'm absolutely just I can't pull myself away from it.
Are there phonics?
Huh?
Are there phonics?
Phonics?
Yeah. Never mind.
Hooked on phonics worked for me.
There you go.
Thank you.
Not quite.
Speaking of Hooked, let's get hooked on some trivia. Move this podcast right along so it doesn't turn into a 3-hour epic.
But wait, more. Or interview.
Before we move on to trivia, let's hear from Philip Asher, who's going to talk about Dungeon Defenders. Hey guys, Desert Eagle here with Philip Asher from Trendy Entertainment. They are the studio responsible for popularizing sleep deprivation by way of Dungeon Defenders, a title which was recently released on XBLA, PSN, and Steam, in addition to the previous mobile iteration. So welcome to the show, Philip, and congratulations on the launch.
Thanks.
Awesome. Now, before we actually talk about the game, I want to find out a little bit about Dungeon Defender's journey through the publishing process. I remember hearing about the game originally during the summer. I think it was the summer of 2010, probably about August. And then the mobile versions of the game kind of followed up a few months, sometime later. And now we're just getting the console and Steam versions most recently. Was there anything that happened there? Was there a little bit of a delay in the publishing process?
Yeah, so, you know, just like many other independent developers, it's very hard to get your title on consoles. And to pull off what we ended up doing, which was a triple platform release, was incredibly difficult. And we had a publisher for Xbox, and we had issues with that. And it basically took about a whole year to sort them out and be able to release on Xbox again. So in the meantime, while we were waiting, we were obviously polishing the game and adding a lot of content, as everyone can see in the final version that came out. Mm-hmm. But also, we decided to make some mobile versions to stay afloat. So we took all the content that we had for console and PC and put together a mobile version of the game and released that in the interim.
Okay. Now, one of the things I noticed was kind of a slew of familiar names on the opening screen. Besides Trendy, you guys, we have our friends D3 as well as Reverb Communications. Can you give me a little insight into this conglomeration of efforts?
So Reverb and D3 are actually co-publishing the game on Xbox 360, and we're the publisher for PC and PS3. So.
Okay, awesome. Okay. Now, I only recently got a chance to play the mobile version of Dungeon Defenders, which scales, I thought, really impressively to high-powered phones. Can you tell me about first wave and second wave and how they compare to the home versions?
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't want to diss ourselves too much, but we made First Wave in kind of a rush, and while we had a huge number of fans, and we've had over 1 million downloads of First Wave on Android, mm-hmm. and great success on iPhone too, there was a lot that we thought we could have done better if we had the time to do it right. So, you know, recently once we wrapped, you know, the console versions they're releasing, we're like, okay, we can finally dive back in and try to fix what went wrong with mobile the first time. And that's kind of what Second Wave was. So we originally released it for the Xperia Play. Mm-hmm. The idea behind that was, you know, we fixed up performance and you had the controller, so you could actually, you know, play a game without just everything on the screen. And mm-hmm. we wanted to take that ideology and apply it to other mobile devices and tablets. So we have completely redesigned user interface, completely redesigned menus, analog stick, which is invisible and locks to where you click on the screen. We actually just finished an update in-house with a new modified chase camera, so if you don't want to just control the camera Zelda style, you can follow your character and you could flick it to the left or right. So a lot of improvements there.
Very cool. Now back at GDC, you guys showed cross-platform play between multiple SKUs. Is that still something that's embedded, that's coded in the game?
Yeah, so that's something that we're going to be patching in at a later date, although we don't have an ETA for it. We've shown it off at GDC and PAX and a whole bunch of different shows, and it's something that technically is complete in the game, but in terms of logistically releasing to mass consumers is still a couple steps away in terms of, you know, how do PS3, PSN players can't friend people playing on Steam, and how do they interact, and what if a mobile player wants to join a PlayStation user's game, then mm-hmm. do we scale the PlayStation user's enemies down? Do we ask them if they want to scale it down? Do we have an option if they let mobile users join? So it's kind of those things which aren't on the technical side, which we're still sorting through in order to get that out.
Will that even allow PS3 and 360 owners to play?
No. I mean, okay. Technically it could.
Right.
But just because of various rules and platform requirements, etc.
Sure, yeah. I thought that would be amazing if that would ever happen, but then the world would probably end soon after.
yeah, it would. Maybe 2012, right?
Right, coming up. Announced here first. And one of the things I really enjoyed about Dungeon Defenders was kind of the sheer complexity of the game. Were you guys ever afraid that the game might be too intricate for mass consumption?
Well, we're an indie studio, so we weren't really concerned about that, even though maybe we should have been. But it was really our goal to make a game that we, as gamers, wanted to play, and we tried to cram, you know, everything from all the different games that we loved into it. We wanted it to be just as strategic. It required just as much strategy as an RPG, as, you know, a tower defense game, a hardcore tower defense game, but at the same time, have just as many RPG elements as something like Diablo, and then we have a good mix between the two. You need both. It's not one or the other. It's both, and I think that's something that a lot of reviews and critics and people have seen and hit upon, is that we did it in a way where you don't feel like you're playing a tower defense game. You don't feel like you're playing an RPG. You feel like you're playing something slightly different than both.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I noticed was you guys had your game is fairly close to Orcs Must Die. When that came out, were you guys surprised, or what was the general feeling and consensus of the studio?
I mean, we were excited to play Orcs Must Die.
Okay.
So I don't think there was any surprise, and I think there was for some reason some sort of perceived rivalry online. But our games are really very, very different games. So, you know, they may be like called tower defense games, but they're not. I don't foresee them as directly competing, and no one really at the studio did either. And obviously, since we're a fan of this general genre, we were just all excited to try out that game and play it. So
awesome. Okay. Now, I've heard some rumors about free DLC on the game. Can you confirm or deny these?
Yes. Well, actually, so we're trying to do stuff specific for each console and each platform that we're on, because, you know, when you have something that's on PC, we want to treat PC users the way PC users are expecting to be treated, and we want to treat console users the way they're expected to be treated. So we kind of have different methodologies in place on how to work with each consumer base. So for PS3 and Xbox, we've already done our first set of community events. We did some test runs with special unique game modes and dropping unique loot for people who joined in, and we're going to be drafting up a schedule for that soon and releasing it. And then for PC, we're going to have some fun free DLC, since we can do we have a lot more free reign to do what we want on PC. So you actually see releasing tomorrow, which is Friday, the 28th, we have our Halloween pack coming out. So we have a brand new Halloween-themed mission. We have 8 character skins. I think people will particularly enjoy the Ninja Monk with completely new animations.
Very cool.
We have 8 new weapons, and then all the enemies are dressed up, and we have a redecorated tavern and a couple other things. So it should be a lot of fun. I think it's a lot of content for free, basically. So.
Very cool. Yeah, that is cool. Now, one thing is Dungeon Defenders, many people noted, can be brutally difficult at times, especially for a single player. And I wanted to know, how much scaling does the game do for party size?
So the game actually does a lot of scaling, and I think it's kind of a misconception that the game is more difficult in single player than it is cooperatively. I think it's the same difficulty, but you don't necessarily have people to talk to and stuff. You're doing everything yourself. The way the game scales is it doesn't change the difficulty of the enemies itself, but it changes the it changes the number of enemies.
Okay.
So, for example, you know, if you have 4 players, there will be X amount times as many enemies as when there's 1 player. And so that way, basically, everyone still has to hold their own weight. So everyone will have to, you know, pitch in, man their sides, etc. But when you're single player, you have less enemies to deal with, but they're the same difficulty, so you have to use the strategy yourselves. And we put in a lot of stuff for single players to be able to get, you know, what we can considered the full experience. You can swap characters on the fly during the days to build any combination of class towers that you want, etc.
Now, is the actual, what is that, the dungeon or the tower building coefficient, that number where every tower you build kind of adds up to that, is that the same for single and multiplayer, or does that change?
That's the same.
That's the same. Okay. Now, one of the things I wanted to know is a few reviews have noted grinding, and by that I mean kind of replaying levels. Now, is grinding a requirement, or can players potentially move straight through the game without having to revisit maps and locations?
Grinding is absolutely not a requirement, but mm-hmm. it all depends on how you play. I think most players will find that they don't have to play one level. Or many players will find you're not supposed to play one level over and over again to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. You can get to the next level by upping your strategy. Now, you may have to have, if you're doing single player, you may want to have two different classes instead of just one class, and mm-hmm. that will make it significantly easier because you'll have a larger variety of towers. For example, if you have apprentice blockades and range attacks plus huntress close range traps, that can help a lot versus just having one or the other. And if you do that, there's minimal grinding involved. However, sometimes people talk about grinding in the sense of how Diablo 2 does it, where you're not going to be able to jump on Insane and play, because this is a role-playing game. On Insane is meant to be challenging for people who are level 70, not to be impossible for people who are level 20. So it kind of works in that way. Not only as you increase in difficulty, you know, your RPG mechanics have to increase. You have to have better characters. You have to have not specific builds, but you have to have a build which you're good at playing. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, you have to have a new strategy, because that changes as well.
Okay. Now speaking of difficulty, beyond heeding the character selection advice, can you offer any tips to prospective defenders in the game for, I don't know, for any of the classes?
Sure. So play with friends. And if you're not playing with friends and you're playing solo, then keep your mind open as to swapping between character classes, especially in the beginning. It's very possible to solo the game one time through on any of the characters.
Sure.
A lot of people mention, you know, oh, we called the monk veteran. Does that mean he's better than other characters? And the answer is no, he's not better, but it requires a different way of thinking about the game than you would normally think about a tower defense and action RPG. So that's why we labeled the Huntress and the Monk as harder to use characters. It's something that once you wrap your mind around how they work, you'll find they're just as effective as the other characters. It's just a different way of playing. So I would suggest, if you're doing solo, playing with different characters in the beginning to A, get a feel for the different characters, and B, have a variety of defenses to use. And if you're not, play co-op, and then you'll get that same experience.
Okay.
And then one other piece of advice quickly is strategy. So one thing about the game is that it's not really common to really need a solid strategy in a third-person game. So something that may look like, oh, I don't have to think about the next wave, I don't have to look at the mini-map and see which enemies are coming from which doors and specifically place defenses to deal with them, but you do, and you won't survive unless you really think about what you need to do in order to get past that next wave.
I see. Now, one last question for you guys. How has the team felt about reviews that have come out so far? There have been a pretty wide range, everything from near-perfect hundreds on Metacritic to some that were less kind in the 60s.
I think we've been generally very positive towards the reviews we've gotten. We knew coming out of the gate that our game was going to be something that was polarizing because it's not an incredibly refined AAA, you know, big publisher title. The menus are a little bit wonky. We shoved tons of content in there that other publishers would have been like, there's no way you're ever putting that in the game. It's way too complicated. And we made something that we really loved, and we knew that, you know, there'd be certain groups of people online who really, really reacted to it and really understood what we were doing, and other people who either, you know, didn't enjoy what we were doing or weren't able to devote enough time to give it that chance. So.
Okay. Awesome. Well, very cool. Thank you for coming on the show, Philip. I really appreciate it. So, guys, check it out. Download the demo. Protect that crystal.
So how much Asher would you say that just was?
52%.
I would say 79%.
Would you say that it was a brimful?
A brimful of Asher?
Oh. Almost as grown and juicy as some of my trivia questions, which are coming heading your way right now. Number one.
Yay.
Before DICE became the go-to guys for Battlefield action, they were putting titles together in their university dorm room. Which of the following wasn't a title from these promising pupils? A. Sword Maker Pro for the Intellivision. B. Pinball Dreams for the Amiga. C. Time Bandits for the Amiga. Or D. Motorhead for the PlayStation. Now say it like this.
Which one wasn't?
Yes, which one wasn't? Motorhead.
Just because...
I'd say Motorhead.
Just because the band is so awesome, I'm going to go with Motorhead.
Sorry, Lemmy. Correct answer. Time Bandits for the Amiga.
Yes. I just bought Time Bandits for $4.
The movie. For the Amiga?
No, the movie.
Oh.
Question number two. Dance Syndrome 2 will be having Kinect owners shaking their asses and looking foolish all over again. Which of the following songs won't players be grooving to? A. Britney Spears' Toxic performed by someone besides Britney Spears. B. Sandstorm. C. Grooves in the Heart. Or D. You're a Jerk.
Wait, what was the question?
Which song will not be in Dance Central 2?
You're a Jerk?
I'm going to say Sandstorm.
Why do you have to say that, man? On the show. Sandstorm? Blue?
Yes.
I think I'll go with B because I really don't pay attention to modern music that much, and I only recognize Toxic of all the choices.
Great answer, Motorhead. No.
Groove is in the Heart.
The Ace of Spades!
I'm sorry?
Grooves in the Heart seems like such an obvious pick.
Yeah, I put it in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I put it there.
Yeah.
Put it in.
Oh, yeah. There we go. This week, Cursed Crusade.
Put it in, Super Bullshit Edition.
This week, Cursed Crusade gets medieval on the hack and slash drink and think genre, courtesy of Paris-based developer Clayton Games. Which of the following games hasn't the studio had a hand in? A. Bet on Soldier. B. Speedball 2 Tournament. C. My Body Coach. Or D. Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
I want to say Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
I think I'm going to go with my whatever coach thing.
My booty coach.
Snoopy.
Correct answer, Snoopy versus Red Baron.
God damn it.
Yeah, because Snoopy had... The developer about Snoopy was significant, I remember.
So significant, you don't remember who it was?
I don't remember who it was, but I remember people making a big deal out of Snoopy when it came out, and it was actually a good game.
It was. It wasn't bad. Watch out, otherwise you might get the worms. You guys got the worms?
Ew, God, that's gross. That's like, yeah, you know how you get the worms? From poop socking it.
No, that's actually how you get rid of the worms.
All right, so watch out for the worms. Actually, Team 17 would like you to get the worms so they can keep putting out titles starring everyone's favorite little pink soldiers.
Yay!
With worms.
I love that.
With Worms Crazy Golf this week, how many Worms titles has the studio put out?
Ooh,
A, 17,
oh
Lord. B, 22, C, 25, or D, 31?
Don't forget E, drag your ass across the carpet.
That's not a fucking thing.
Does this include ports?
No, main titles.
Oh,
I'm going to say 17 sounds too good, so I'm just going to pick it.
Wait, give me the numbers again.
17, 22, 25, 31.
22 for me.
Sean, I think I gotta go defer to your judgment, man. If anyone knows, it would be you. So I'm gonna say 17.
Well, see, that's the thing is, I don't know. 17 sounds too good because it's actually their name. But I also feel like if it was 17, they would have made some sort of special 17.
Okay, fuck it. Let's say 25.
Let's see who knows about little pink soldiers. That would be Blue. 22 was the correct answer.
Jesus.
Dragging my ass across the carpet in celebration.
You know, that's something that was one of the two games that Sean and I used to play like all the time.
That's true.
Play with the Whims. I think I heard the story on a podcast.
You heard the story of us playing with worms?
Yes.
That's gross and creepy.
Don't eat them.
Especially if they came out of the poop sock.
Yes. Actually, don't eat anything that comes out of the poop sock, generally.
Really, really don't.
Unless you're into that. Motion Sports Adrenaline hopes to get the juices flowing with Move owners this week. Which one of the following hardcore activities will purchasers not be playing? A, extreme trampoline. B, human frog. C, kite suit. Or D, wingsuit.
Ooh. I see what you did there.
Kite suits.
Wait, say them again.
Extreme trampoline, human frog, kite suit, wingsuit.
Trampoline.
No, the answer was extreme trampoline.
Extreme dude, fuck you. You know what the fuck I meant. Extreme trampoline.
Extreme kite suit.
I'm going to go with the wingsuit.
You guys are all wrong. Human frog.
Damn it!
I was thinking frog with real cars. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be cool. That sounded too obscure to be fake.
Sean, you're overthinking the trivia. Again.
Don't overthink the trivia.
Listen, we can't heart. House.
Heart.
House heart.
One of those. We answered one of the mailbag questions, speaking of overthinking, but we do have a few more. One aimed just at our friend Nola. Shishu asks, I want to know Nola and the rest of the crew's thoughts on Phoenix Jones and other real-life superheroes.
This is where I wish Tide Gear was here to back me up on this, but if he really wants to stop crime, he should just become a cop.
Yeah, pretty much. Any other thoughts?
Well,
one thing's for sure, that name was it, Brandon Jones, was it, or something like that?
Phoenix Jones.
Yeah. Phoenix Jones, whatever. Jones. I mean, that's such a stupid name. That's not a real life superhero. A real life superhero would never use something that could probably be somebody's real name.
Yeah, that's not his real name.
His real name now because he's in jail.
Yeah. Well, he may have been using that name for a long time. His given birth name is Benjamin John Francis Fodor.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, he's in jail now. You know this, again.
Are you looking this up or you know this?
I did look it up, in fact.
Okay.
I think this question we've been posed is somewhat of a trick question. I think that there's a difference between, for example, and it's fictional, but we can make it a real world scenario if we like, the scenario set up in something like The Watchmen, where you end up with a group of heroes who really are not, I mean, they're just sort of people. They don't have any superpowers or anything.
Except for the guy, the blue guy with the no pants on.
But I'm saying like... Dr. Manhattan was part of the like...
Dr. Commando.
Schlong Man was part of the original crew. The original, the Minutemen did have superpowers.
Okay.
Whereas the... Or is it the other way around? Yeah, no. The Minutemen had superpowers, and the Watchmen didn't, and they were just people who chose to sort of behave extraordinarily. So I think you have three classes of people. You have superheroes, you have people who hide their identities, which Phoenix Idiot didn't do, and behave extraordinarily. And then you have people who do what Phoenix did, which was he wore fucking bulletproof vests and ran around with mace and, like, pepper spray and handcuffs and a stun baton. So basically, he was a cop that wasn't licensed that was running around beating people up. Like, that's not a hero. That's not even a vigilante like Batman is. That's just somebody who's like, I feel like being a cop without going through the training, so I'm just going to fuck a bunch of people up.
You know who else is like that? Dog the Bounty Hunter.
True.
He's got a mullet.
True, but he's legally allowed to do that, so that's okay. So if you want to beat people up, either become a cop or become a martial artist or become a WWF person or become a bounty hunter. And if you want to actually look at, like, because superheroes, to our knowledge, don't exist right now. So that leaves us with the group of people who dress up in costume and behave extraordinarily. And there really aren't really any of them. So if you want to do that, I think that that's a totally cool thing. But I'm not sure it's really necessary because there's not, like, evil villains running around either. There's just your standard criminals. And I feel like calling the cops is just as effective
as
showing
killer.
Up in... that's...
That's 30 years ago, but sure, it's timely.
But that's psychotic people, and you can't really... You can't beat a psychotic person up either, because that's not their bag. Their bag is that they're fucked up.
Sure, so they're going to like fucked up. I'm kidding.
No, it doesn't work that way. You have to put them in a crazy house. That's where they go.
Oh, and did you hear they finally decoded whatever that last Zodiac killer message was?
Allegedly.
Oh, what was it?
Allegedly. They supposedly got the name of the guy.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
So does that mean they can go, like,
I think he's dead. He's long dead.
Yeah,
he died 92 of diabetes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm not researching here.
He died of diabetes. And also, you know what's really hypocritical is that Jones, the Phoenix Jones guy, said he doesn't condone other people dressing up and fighting crime. Right. So really, it's like you're not even...
He doesn't want to be out of a job. Too late.
He's out of a job.
Yeah, he's in jail, according to Nola.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
Phoenix
Wright is cool. Phoenix Jones is not cool.
There we go.
Have you seen the first screenshot from the Phoenix Wright movie in Japan?
No. Awesome.
It looks pretty good. Well,
I don't know if it looks good, but it does look true to the game.
They got the hair down?
Kind of. As good as you can get the hair in real life.
Hey, my brother has that hair in real life. They should have picked him.
Right. Hammerhead asks, why do you think Spider-Man Edge of Time is getting such low review scores? It's a pretty good game. By the way, why haven't you reviewed it? Didn't ask for it. I don't know. That's all. I haven't played it, haven't touched it, haven't demoed it, haven't seen it. Nothing. So I can't comment.
You haven't poop sucked it?
No, have not. Don't intend
to. You haven't super bullshitted it?
Well, from what I've heard, it's too short to poop sock.
You should actually poop sock and then beat the game with the poop sock.
You mean actually take the poop sock, wield it above your head, and then smack the game a couple of times with it?
I think that's what
this analogy has lost its meaning.
You did this, Sean.
Speaking of poop socking, Nest Glass, I'm sick of browns and grays. How important is the game's color scheme to you?
As long as it fits, we lost Sage. I'm sorry. As long as it fits whatever their vision is, I don't care what colors it is. I do think there are a lot of similar games, but I feel like if that is your art direction, then don't not do it because everybody else is doing it. Just make sure that your art direction is good,
mm-hmm.
and that your art director is not.
I think there's more to art than just the color palette. Mm-hmm. The stylistic decisions are also equally important.
Limbo is a gorgeous game, and it's all black and white.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And shadow effects. I think brown and gray is probably on its way out, actually. So if you go for brown and gray, then that would end up...
Speaking of black and white, isn't there a Vita title that's coming out near launch that's black and white, which is kind of questioning?
I don't remember which one that was, though.
That just seems weird for a launch title, because usually you want something, you know, light, simple, but eye-grabbing to kind of push it, and something black and white may, I don't know, seem like it would be a different...
It comes with little deviants, so...
Okay.
That's pretty colorful.
Hellbent Robot asks, I hope you guys answer that. What game character would you have a one-night stand with question? So.
Woo! And it's right. See. No, just kidding.
Objection!
yeah, that'd be terrible.
Have you ever seen that show, Suits?
No.
No.
There's one episode where it's all about the lawyer sex, lawyer on lawyer sexings.
I believe that Shark show is called Lost in Legal and starred William Shatner.
That was also a show with lawyers in it.
Wait, did you say what video game character or what fictional character?
No, video game character, but you said Phoenix Wright and you're in law school, so that's immediately where my mind went, was lawyer-on-lawyer action.
Gotcha. Do you know what sucks? There can be no lawyer-on-lawyer action, because fucking everybody at law school is married. It's lamer than heck. Just throwing that out there. I was very disappointed. I was like, cool, new people I can meet, I can hang out with, and they're all like, I can't go out and hang out. I got a wife. I got a husband. I got to go home. It's lame.
I like how you would want to meet them and then hang out with them.
I thought you were going to say because sharks don't mate, they fight.
That's not cool, man. I'm not a shark. Right. Anyway.
But you have a dorsal fin.
Video game characters that we would... It's not a dorsal fin, it's a mohawk. So video game characters...
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Bayonetta.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Echo the Dolphin.
Objection.
Who is that Bobcat character?
Bubsy.
Bubsy with the yarn.
What could possibly go wrong? I think I was Bubsy.
Wait,
is the writer's strike over yet?
Really, Bubsy? I mean, what's next, Gex?
It was me.
Out the show.
Dude, he's hilarious and adorable. How could you not want that in bed?
Oh my god, I can't post this like this. This isn't going to work. People aren't going to take us seriously ever again. Bubsy?
I mean, I'm trying to think of someone else. Just give me a minute. But...
Dude, you're a girl. Like there are Batman. Tons of hot dudes in video games.
What hot dudes would you say? Batman would probably kill me just as soon as he would have sex with me, so it can't do Batman.
Marcus
works Catwoman.
How about Phoenix
and it's
Jones?
Sensual, yeah, and they so fucked up the masks shit. Stay on. The masks stay on.
Okay, to my credit, look at it this way. Bubsy, right? He's reassuring. He's reliable. He knows how to handle his claws. I mean, I don't think you could go wrong with this. He has a great sense of humor, and he likes sliding around on water slides all the time. In fact, I want to be best friends with Bubsy. He sounds like just my kind of guy.
I bought Bubsy 2 a couple of weeks ago. I actually found a copy for a couple of bucks, so I grabbed it.
Was it any good?
No, it's shit. It's worth it.
It's shit. I like the first one. Or you could go super old school and you could have sex with Clayton from that, what's that game with all the balls of clay? Because he could turn himself into...
Clay a third?
No. Because he can turn
Santa.
Himself...
Sumo Santa.
Yeah, no, he's right. Clay Fighter.
Hold on. I'll look it up.
See, there's Clay Fighter and Claymates. What's in there? Or yeah. What is it?
Yep. You're right.
Claymates is what I'm thinking of. No, I lied. Yeah, it's Claymates.
I've never actually played Claymates.
It's the first of the Claymation titles, which later end up including the Clay Fighter series. Blue, who would you do?
You know, I'm torn. It's like
I hope you're not the one who's torn.
What I was going to say was, I'm torn. It's like, part of me would want to have a one-night stand with Lara Croft, just to say I had a one-night stand with Lara Croft, somebody who's, like, relatively smart. And the other part of me is thinking, just screw Cammy's brains out.
The latter.
I mean, it's probably going to be a good time either way, but it just depends on if it's just a one-night stand, or if you're actually going to be in a relationship with the person.
This is a one night stand.
If there's zero chance of actually being in a relationship, then I'd probably go with Lara Croft just to say I banged Lara Croft.
I think you're overthinking it, but
maybe I'd go with the Assassin's Creed dude.
Ezio or LTR?
No, Dylan or whatever the hell his name is at the end of the game.
Oh God, no.
All right. If you would like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, silence. If you'd like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest checking out www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. If you like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, I don't know you, and I don't know why you would. But Rob's got good opinions on things that aren't disgusting, and he's @tech_gaming.
Don't undersell us.
Yep. I don't, and I'm @SeanNola with two N's. Sage seems to be on level and sometimes, and she's Samurage. And Blue Swim is probably just about as bad as I am, and he is @BlueSwim. Subscribe to us on iTunes. There's a new link, so make sure you're getting the one that has the new episodes in it.
Say it all.
And that
say
is our... Oh, sorry.
Hey,
It says new link, new art, same old poop sock jokes.
Okay, now before we go, I have started a club on Forza 4, and I'm looking for drivers. So I guess if people have Forza 4 and I guess post their gamer tag in the comments, would that be okay? Then... maybe I'll send an invite your way. Or probably.
Yep. Hold your breath.
Oh, and shout out to Jet Grind Radio because he was asking when our new podcast was recorded while we were recording it. So
sweet.
We're doing that right now.
He's an awesome game. You know that? He really is awesome.
Yep. All right. So that is a show. Cut. Print.
Wow.
I'm so sorry, guys.